Welcome back to Normies Like Us, the podcast that reminds you it's hip to be square. Get your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape! We're going bananas for our new long-form series, and ending April with the one, the only, the original simian sensation, the Planet of the Apes, a Normies Like Us. Ooh, ooh, ah, ah. I'm gonna get canceled.
You're sticking paws off me, you damn dirty ape! You maniac! You blew it up! Damn you! God damn you all to hell!
You heard it up top. We are going bananas because things are about to get a little outrageous, a little hectic, a little, apish, because guess what? We're talking Planet of the Apes here on Normies Like Us with your hosts, Astronaut Colin.
I guess just Astronaut Mike.
You can call me Bright Eyes Jacob.
Oh, Bright Eyes Jacob. Great, great, great. I want a lover. I don't have
hello,
love.
Hello, Bright Eyes.
Yes. Bright Eyes, do your trick. Come on, Bright Eyes.
Bright Eyes, you stole my little pencil, Bright Eyes. You're so silly.
Right.
Humans will do that. They're shifty.
Human see, human do, you know? So obviously,
we're saying the greatest quotes of all time, yes, because we're talking that's the right. Greatest movie ever, Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, potent quotables. Planet of the Apes, you know, one of the sci-fi classics. Charlton Heston, obviously, starring in this thing. But we're kicking off, well, we're finishing April and beginning Planet of the Mapes, I guess, you know?
That's right.
Properly. with the original, and I kind of pitched this after we finished Pirates, and it's like, okay,
yeah,
what's another long-standing series? We're trying to roll it over, and I've always liked all the original movies, and I haven't seen all of the remakes. I've seen like 2 out of 3, and we're getting a fourth one coming up next week. So we figured out, yeah, let's just do it. Let's do Planet of the April, or Mapes. However.
That's right. It yeah. ties into the new one that's coming out in the Planet of the Mapes later mm-hmm. this month. For me, I had never seen any of these original ones, so I'm very excited to talk about this. I am a fan of the new ones, and so I'm excited to get to those in about 6 months. I'm also excited to talk about these because I've never seen these. This is my first time watching Planet of the Apes, 1968.
Wow, that's wild. Ooh. It's cool to know. I'm going to be interested to get your perspective. Colin, what about you? What was your background with the original? Ooh.
Jacob, have you seen any of the other weird Charlton Heston sci-fi films like Soylent Green or Omega Man? Obviously, the fakest and most unrealistic of them all. The
science fantasy.
Yeah.
Wow. The Omega Man, I believe that is that Will Smith, I Am Legend, was based on the same source That's material right. as Omega Man. They're both based on the same book, I believe.
That's great.
But I don't think I've ever seen it. So no, not really.
Fantastic movies. Mike, have you seen any of those old Charlton Heston classics?
I think to this day, this is, well, barring maybe another movie in the series, this is the only Charlton Heston exposure I have, period.
Wow.
I mainly know Charlton Heston as a crazy old man who's going, I love guns. Give me my guns.
He does in this too. So we saw it early.
That's right.
Well,
he loves guns and hates people.
He knows that we need them to protect ourselves, even though monkeys have guns as well.
Yeah,
that's true.
Well, you know, I grew up with a dad who loved Charlton Heston, so I'll just say that I watched those a lot. Did not have a ton of early exposure with this, but obviously my first interaction with Planet of the Apes was, we've shared it a bunch, we'll probably talk about it a bunch, the very classic Simpsons bit in the episode A Fish Called Selma, which featured the Troy McClure actor character doing a musical of Planet of the Apes, right? And I remember my father explaining all the gags to me and then saying, because it was only a couple years later, hey, that's that thing. Let's go see this Tim Burton movie. And did you guys see that in theaters?
I don't know if I saw it in theaters, but I did see it around when it came out at some point.
Yeah, around 2001-ish.
And again, I didn't have a reference for the original, so I was like, you know, this seems fine. I knew it was a remake of an older movie that I hadn't seen, but I was like, sure. It's not bad.
I think Mark Wahlberg, he can stand toe-to-toe with Charlton Heston, you know.
That's right.
Acting prowess.
I think For people our age, the draw was probably, and we're obviously going to do that episode down the line, so we'll talk about all this, but was that it was Tim Burton, who was kind of like an early filmmaker that people our age could be like, whoa, that's a guy you can identify as a quote-unquote filmmaker. But my love for this stopped at that. Like, I saw that movie in theaters. We got it on DVD, and I watched it a couple of times, but I had never seen these until, like, well into college. And it's just not a franchise that really stuck around with me. So I'm excited to rewatch them all.
Yeah. I mean, I love all these originals. Like I said, I had the Blu-rays of them. I saw this well before, you know, I even saw the Simpsons thing. Like I knew Planet of the Apes, right? And, you know, there is a twist ending that we'll get to when we get there. But did you guys know kind of the surprise when you were going into this? Because it is pretty pop culture.
I think from the Simpsons, it was kind of explained to me. You know, I think I kind of walked into this, and it's so interesting that maybe I'd say this to the other Charlton Heston film. Do you guys know the Soylent Green twist, having not seen that
film? I don't know that.
Yes, yes.
Interesting. Okay.
Oh, you don't.
Well, Mike, did you see Planet of the Apes not knowing the twist?
I did not know the twist. I saw it when I was younger. You know,
wow.
My dad just had a big collection of movies. I think he liked collecting movies more than watching them, but we had a ton.
Sure.
So, and I like sci-fi because I like Star Wars, and we somehow got around to Planet of the Apes, I always liked this movie a lot, and then I got into the sequels, and yeah, this is a franchise that's kind of, I think I like it more than most people, let's say that, you know? So I didn't know the twist. Yeah. I was really blown away. Like when I first saw it, I was like, dang, you know, that's crazy. So
for me, I definitely knew the twist. I knew all the cultural, like, osmosis. It's a lot like Star Wars, where it's like everybody knows the twists of Star Wars and stuff,
right?
And like you, Colin, I knew the Simpsons reference before I ever saw the movie, because I've never seen it until now, but I did know it from that Simpsons reference as well.
That's my main
touchstone into this series. So
okay, well, I'm stoked to really kick this off then with the original. And again, before we get into the episode, the keeping on our tradition of literary adaptations, you know, this was based on a French book called La Planète des Singes, or Planet of Monkeys or something. But yeah.
Yes, Monkey World is kind of what it more accurately translates to, which is very world. Interesting.
Which, again, monkeys, apes, we pitched that. We're going to do Mean Monkey, you know, month. And it's like, we know there's a difference between monkeys and apes, clearly. Okay, audience, don't ask.
I don't know that I do, Mike. I don't know that I do, know
Jacob,
that.
Monkeys are a kind of ape, I believe.
No, false.
Well, monkeys and apes are like cousins.
They're simians, but yeah, monkeys have tails, apes do not, right?
Right.
So, like,
right.
A baboon is a monkey.
Some elves
right?
have tails as well.
What?
Said some elves have tails as well.
True. So they wouldn't be apes; they would be monkey elves or something. But
yeah,
and then you have old.
So they
world
split
monkeys.
Up at some point in the evolutionary chain, where one grew tails and one didn't. Basically,
one decided to walk around. Yeah.
Are apes, right? Or no? Gorillas and orangutans are versions of, or subgenres.
Now, how do you say gorillas? Orangutan, if I may ask?
How did I say it?
You say orangutans?
Orangutan. Orangutan.
Orangutans.
Orangutan. Well, those are apes. So everything in this film is an ape, but we'll make Mean Monkey joke. But
that's right.
Know. And again, you have to know your New World and Old World monkeys. New World monkeys have their eyes front facing. Old World monkeys are like lemurs. Their eyes are on the side. This is all very relevant.
I know all of that already, of course.
Can I ask one last question before we jump in now? This is our long form series. We've done a ton of these. We just came off Pirates, like Mike said. Mm-hmm. We're diving into this one. This is like 9, including the new one, right? We're going to be here for a while.
I think so, yeah.
There's
I'll
5.
The exact number.
Five
then
original.
There's the Tim Burton ones, and then there's 4. So technically 10 by the time we get to the new one, which will be in a year.
Super excited and interesting. Do we add a bonus to that? Do we start pitching and thinking now through these episodes? Because I've got a couple thoughts. Is it either 2001 A Space Odyssey, a movie very famous for having a monkey sequence?
Oh, sure.
Or is it something like Dunstan Checks In, a movie that just like has a real monkey?
The difference. There's also Harry and the Henderson DNA tied to this movie.
Sure.
So.
Sure, that's good.
Or we just do every King Kong as we kind of kicked around as a joke.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
There's a lot of things we could do with monkeys. We could keep this rolling for another 5 years.
I love monkey movies.
I hate monkey movies. I'm scared of monkeys in the same way that I'm scared of horses. I'm very worried that, like, Nope, one of them will rip my face off.
Fair.
Yeah, maybe we should watch Nope.
Let's watch MVP, Most Valuable Primate. Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
All right. Well, we can determine who we think the MVP of this movie is by the time we get to the ending. So I say we hop into it right now. Let's crash land this ship, walk around the desert for a little bit, skinny dip, and talk Planet of the Apes.
We're back here on Normies Like Us. An incredible Jerry Goldsmith score, isn't that what it is playing over us right now. Now, Mike, again, yeah. you're doing some incredible video work that I am worried our listeners who don't go to our YouTube at Normies _like_us see you are chomping away on that, my Heston friend.
Well, you know,
love it.
If I was going to be on a mission to space to recolonize Earth, I think the main thing I would want is my cigar and my sleep heroin, you know? Yeah.
This movie was made in the 1960s because of that. I was like, smoking on his small spaceship seems not like a great idea, but
not a mention of sending a probe down to the planet they land on of like, is there air or anything? He pops out of that, the cigar already lit again. They're walking
around. He had it in his pocket.
He's ashing on foreign substances. They get excited when they see a plant, but we'll talk all this.
Yeah, we'll get into it. It's like we watch a movie like Annihilation or something, and it's like, don't touch the plants. And then it's like, just cigars fine, you know? But anyway, very 60s, but what's the background of this?
Very 60s. Planet of the Apes, 1968. It is directed by Franklin J. Schaffner, who did Patton. He also did Boys from Brazil. Are you guys familiar with either of those movies?
Familiar with Patton.
I'm familiar with both. The Boys from Brazil, that has to do with like Nazi war criminals going to Brazil and making clones, I believe, of Hitler.
It's another movie where I just like pray to God that Mike doesn't know the twist, because it's this era of movies.
I don't.
You just got to check them all out, listeners. They're super crazy.
Right. There is, again, just a little more background that I did do some research on. There is a bit of, let's say, Twilight Zone DNA in this, as far as, you know,
that's
one of the directors was attached, the first pass of the script, so the twist is a big
thing. Rod Serling was involved with the writing of this, right? Who's obviously the creator of Twilight Zone.
He did the first couple drafts, I think, right?
Colin? The screenplay ended up getting taken away from him. I'll tell you guys, one thing stayed, and that is a certain landmark that shows up at the end, which, again, is not in the book at all. To talk a little bit about the French novel, I forget what the word is, apostiary, apostletary. It is it is essentially written as diary. You guys know what I mean? That's sort of how the first Stephen King books written, Carrie. I don't know if you guys are familiar with how that's written, but it's like, you know, like an account of a tale of, you know, these are the strange things that I'm like, writing down as it's happening. And that's much a movie set in modern times at the time it was written in the 30s in France, like Mike said, and is not like this ancient, almost sort of like Greco-Roman culture that the film has.
Yeah. Like they're working in, from what I understand, I haven't read it yet, but I did some research. They're working in skyscrapers, office building suits. And like, I guess there's aliens that find essentially like the message in a bottle account of what the astronauts saw. So that's what they're reading, is those log entries essentially. Yeah.
Very strange.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know what I thought of? A really scary science fiction story would be, instead of a planet controlled by apes, a planet controlled by French people.
Oh, a planet controlled really by scary. Mimes.
In the original novel, Jacob, obviously he can't communicate with the apes, so he has to learn ape. They have to learn French to communicate with him. So they are speaking French the entire time.
Of course,
it's very funny. A bunch of apes being like, parlez-vous français?
And he's got to figure out whatever the simian dialect is. Yeah, as opposed to that, they can just speak English. It's a little bit easier for Heston, I think, in this movie.
Pretty nice.
Well, in the book is the spoiler alert about the twist of this movie, right? We should say
we're going to be talking about the whole thing, obviously.
That's right. In the original book, is there's not the twist of it's the planet is actually Earth?
I don't think so.
Can I, just to set us up, we're going to talk about obviously the whole thing, and we're going to get first reactions. I'm excited to talk all this. The one bit of confusion I have is, what is the mission they're going on? Because in the book, it truly is time dilation is what they're studying. Yes. But in this, are they studying time dilation, or are they colonizing a foreign planet?
My thinking in the movie is they're colonizing the planet. Because Charlton Heston explicitly explains, hey, that's what Stewart was here for.
Yeah, there's a very weird scene.
Thank you, Mike. Yes.
We brought one woman with her. We're gonna,
she was going to please
repopulate this planet with humans.
Yes.
Unfortunately, she died. So now... Yeah.
Well, in the book, I don't believe that's what it is. I believe that they know that they're just traveling through time almost, or it is a mistake of some kind.
Well, literally, the first scene of this is, you know, he's sitting at the control, chomping on a cigar. Everyone I know is dead. 700 years have passed, but for me, it's only 1 year. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very, very wild. But I guess that's the thing. The setup, is, you know, we're going to colonize a planet. It's super future. I love cigars, you know. Everyone else is sleeping, and he just kind of pitches like, yeah, you know, I don't like humanity. Let's see what happens. He's very kind of nihilistic.
Hate humanity. Yes. Taylor, we're talking about an
interesting main
Taylor,
character.
Played by Charlton Heston. Now, Jacob, you say an interesting character. That's literally the reason he took the role. This was going to be a small indie project. Charlton Heston attached himself and said, no, I want to play a character that goes from pessimistic to being humanity's last stand and hope. And they bumped up the budget a ton. And of course, 20th Century Fox steps in, and that's how all this comes together. The makeup, we can talk about all of that. It's made by an Academy Award. I mean, they basically invent the Academy Award for makeup for this performance because the year prior to it, 2001, didn't win it, you know, got nothing for it. So,
like we finally need to start recognizing this, and then it would eventually. Yeah. So that's very cool. But yeah, go ahead, Jacob. Yeah, what's your first impressions or general thoughts here?
Please, what do you think, Doug?
I really liked it. Having never seen it before, I didn't know exactly what to expect. And by the end of it, I was like, you know what? That was really good. And I understand why, you know, it's so famous, of course. My biggest problem, I guess, with it is sometimes the pacing felt weird. Like, for instance, in the beginning, where it starts out a little slow, where they, you know, they crash land on the planet. It's a lot of just these three guys walking around, and you don't even see. It's a movie called Planet of the Apes. These apes don't even show up until about half an hour into
one
a 2-hour
small
movie.
City. Now, but Jacob, city you say like City of the Apes,
that's funny.
Suburb of the Apes, block.
Yeah,
of the
yeah,
apes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You say like you didn't know what to expect. I'll say, as somebody who has seen this film before, sitting down to it. And you watch it and you realize what's washing over you is, oh, this is literally a perfect three-act structure film where it's like it's three movies. It's space adventure on a barren world. It's creature feature. I can't believe it. And then it's courtroom drama, which is kind of like, kind of like a slow, drawn-out thing. So the two bookends, these sort of like slower things to what you expect when you grow up in pop culture being like, well, Planet of the Apes, that's the movie where, like, every scene is like, apes, 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 apes.
Right.
This is not that movie, my friend.
No, it starts as this, like, slow survival movie of crash landing on this alien planet. Mm-hmm. And then even how it ends is, like, they have that long scene in the archaeological caves and stuff. And it's like, I'm like, this movie's about to end. And I still haven't even got to this famous last scene yet.
Right.
And I looked at the runtime. It was, like, a little under 2 hours. I'm like, that's crazy because, I mean, obviously, they're probably limited by their budget and stuff. But this movie could have been longer, and probably if it was made today, like every movie's like 2.5 hours now. So I felt like, I was like, damn, this is pretty short for how much, what happens in this movie.
They cover a lot of ground, like literally and figuratively, like, cause there's a lot of, you know, debating happening over like faith versus science and theology and classism.
That's right.
There's a lot of topics being covered as like kind of a moral parable, which is why I like these. I said off pod that they're like Apesop's fables, like all these original movies, they're all just different kind of parables. But I could also see a version of this that is like 47 minutes and airs as a Twilight Zone episode as well. Like I could go both
and
ways.
You understand where we're heading in the 70s with Star Trek, Mike. Like sci-fi used to just be like, well, what if one thing was weird and people had meetings? And you're like, oh, wow, that's what a concept.
No, it reminds me of like Measure of a Man or something, the classic Next Generation episode where it's like, what if humans were the animals? What if apes controlled society? And what rights does, you know, this person have?
It asks the question right now, Jacob, what if a cow talked? And what if its first words right now in our society were an insult where it was like, you guys smell. You're like, Not only do they not only like one talk out of nowhere, like what it said was the craziest sentence to yell at
Don't
you.
Don't touch
basically.
Me.
Yeah. And your whole society is like, those things can talk. That's it said a full sentence. That's crazy.
Well, if they would have been able to translate what John Blackthorne said in Portuguese, like he pretty much said the same thing too. But right. But this is like 68, like they were filming in 67, like this civil rights movement, this is Vietnam, like a lot of these issues are big talking points of society of equal rights and that too. So it is like a product of its time in that way.
Well, the hosing scene, Mike, I was really, when I looked up the time period, I really thought about the civil rights movement and the moment where a guy is hosing someone down to rob them of their humanity. Just absolutely horrifying.
So for what seems like, maybe potentially goofy sci-fi movie, especially looking back at like the special effects I think are great still, but it is a little it's dated for what it is, but I love it. It's like really charming.
No, I think
like,
for,
you wouldn't realize how much like cultural like commentary is happening here.
For the time period, I mean 1968, I think it's the obviously the makeup and the special effects, I think they hold up really well, and the cinematography and the action scenes even. But even though I thought like some of the scenes, like his escape scene kind of went on too long, where it's like, he's running around pushing a lot of apes over and stuff. Funny scene, but, it's like, okay, I get it.
Classic.
He's trying to escape.
And I cannot wait to see the Mark Wahlberg version of that scene. Oh my God.
I can't wait for that either. It's a movie that I also get a little bugged about when it has these absolutely like insane plot contrivances of like, Taylor was kind of shot in the throat. So this guy who could, could just wrap all this up by saying like, actually, you know, I'm like a dude and I'm smart and stuff. That's not happening. He's constantly not getting like a paper and pen where he can write down like, knock this off. I understand what you monkeys are up to. This is garbage nonsense. So that like, it bugs me a little, but again, like the thrill ride that we're on, and it just, when you watch this movie, it really feels like a movie. And I know that's a dumb thing to say, but it just feels like all this stuff Mike just said about civil rights and stuff. Like it's not only again that there's messaging here that it's important. We're talking about the special effects. We're talking about the actors, but you have Charlton Heston, who again was Moses, you know, playing again. Because if you guys haven't seen Omega Man, that is like the Jesus parable is what that essentially is. That movie ends with him being crucified. Like that's it is like an insane, like he is this figure that is like, he's Adam and Eve in this. Like it, like there are so many like religious tones that are going on while also asking questions of being like a monkey talks about how they evolved from humans. And basically Taylor's like, that's ridiculous. But it's so like, stupid. But like, what our idea of it's ridiculous then? The reverse of that? Like, you know, it's like it's almost questioning that. Like there's almost conflicting ideas going on in this movie. But I think that's what makes it interesting is it has so many ideas.
Yeah, a lot of big ideas. And like you said, it becomes basically a courtroom drama where you're debating evolution and faith and science and all this stuff. But I think Charlton Heston, the way he plays this character is so interesting because he's like this pessimistic cowboy who, you know, he has these like philosophical discussions with the other guy in his crew at the beginning where he's like, you just hate the world, don't you? And there's that one scene where he plants the American flag and he just starts laughing, you know?
So what cynical.
A ridiculous thing. But then it's almost like a pessimistic movie because the ending is just so nihilistic where it's like, he started out pessimistic. And then by the end of it, he's so like he's lost all despair because he, you know, the big twist. And that's literally just how the movie ends. It's crazy.
So I said in a past episode, I can't even remember what one it was. I apologize about this. But I told a story about how Joe and I had cable when we first moved to California and I would record everything. And because of that, I was a super huge Mad Men fan. Okay. Now I brought this up then and I want to bring this up now and I should have shared this with you guys, but if you're familiar with this scene, if you guys watch Mad Men as well, obviously that show takes place in the 60s. There's a very famous episode where he finally interacts with his son, Don Draper, John Hamm's character, and takes young Bobby Draper to a movie and it cuts to the kid on the edge of his seat, Jacob, leaning forward, and it goes, "You madman, you blew it up." And it's the last scene of this movie. And again, I had probably never seen this film at this point. And if you watch this film, and again, listeners, I urge you to, if you have not, this is a really one of a kind weird movie. There's no score. There's nothing. It's this beautiful, weird silence. It just fades
out on that last shot.
As it fades out on that last, the weird, most nihilistic ending ever. And it cuts to a reverse shot of John Hamm. And I'm going to lean back. So I'm sorry, listeners, because I have to perform this.
I know this. I know this scene.
Smoking a cigarette. And he goes, he shakes his head, kind of like hits his cigarette away and looks up. And Bobby, his son, turns back and goes, "That's it? What does that mean?" And he goes, "Well..." And it's not that he explains that it's this planet. It's what Jacob just said about it's the heaviness of the ending. Mm-hmm. It's not that you're putting together like what it means. It's just literally like you just watch the film and you're like, that's how they're ending it. But that's the bleakest thing I've ever seen. Right. And
on this character, this
franchise, it's going to keep going that way. Sorry. I'm go right ahead.
That's incredible. I love that show.
But like Taylor, he's talking to Landon in the beginning. He's like, "Yeah, I'm on this mission because I got to think there's something better out here than what we've done on Earth with man, you know, fighting his own brother, you know,
do you
all
let
this
your
stuff.
Neighbor's children starve when you have extra food?" He says all that stuff in the beginning. Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, "I got to hope there's something better." And then by the end of it, he's just like, losing it, man.
Damn, when he sees the mummy of the girl who has a crack in her hyperbaric chamber, and that's why she is like 1,000 years old, he goes, "Oh, it's a shame we lost the breeding stock." Basically, you're like, this guy has to die by the end of this movie. He's like a villain.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fights about women that are interesting.
No, and I'm gonna y'all get into that, but there's I think Taylor is a absolute madman. Speaking of madmen, like, he is the least qualified to have survived, because we have Dodge, who's like the scientist that said he'd walk in a volcano naked if he could learn something. And then Landon's like the good old astronaut boy who's basically doing this out of career legacy. It's like, "Oh, I just had to. I'm the best of the best."
And then there's a 65-year-old man, like
smoking a cigar.
Sent into space. Yeah.
Right. Like, what? Is this what NASA would do? 500
years.
He's
probably most likely to survive just because he's good at self-preservation.
It's, when we sent John Glenn up to circle the moon when he was a senator, and people are like, "Let's just see what happens when we send like a guy that old into space." It was it's like an experiment.
Exactly. And it's just great because the movie opens with him just smoking his cigar, talking about how he hates shit. He just injects himself with sleep heroin or whatever, and then no teeth brushing, just, "I'm going to lay down for 2,000 years. It's like the most wild
cigar in my pocket.
Kind of comfortable. Let me see. Like,
the best of the best, you know? It's like, okay. The best and brightest eyes we send to space.
Yeah, that's wild.
Do you think they all put themselves to sleep, or he put them all asleep? Because I guess he was like the captain. And this madman was like, "Screw the earth, screw everything." I'm like, "Wait, what?"
I'll be right there.
As I'm like fading away, I'd be like, "I would assume he sabotaged our mission."
Dude, I woke up. He likes the party. He's the last one up, you know? It's all right. You know? But.
Yeah.
It is funny when he realize, like, he's just so flat about it, like, "Looks like we're here to stay." Like, when the ship goes under, he's like, he really doesn't give a shit. Yeah.
At least the idiot locals are primitives. We'll probably rule over them. Like,
in a week.
Like, starts that too. You're like, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. They run from a rock at one point. That was very silly. I'm curious how they made that one big rock.
They hide behind other rocks to run from that rock. It's very insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. And immediately upon seeing the native humans, he immediately sees a female that he takes an interest in. It's like, "Well, I guess I'll take her as my mate."
Yeah. It's like, we don't know this primitive humanoid species. He thinks they're on a different planet. And he's like, "That thing, I'm going to get
that alien that looks like a human."
Yeah, he says, I have experienced physical love. He says, "I'm not a virgin, but never love
a lot of lovers, but I've never..."
Mm-hmm. Now he says that of what is her name? Nova, the human character. Kim Hunter, right? Is that correct?
No, that's Linda.
Oh, that's Zira. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I get it. I have
Linda Harrison. I'm sorry, Harrison, as Nova. As sort of the first humans they come across, just absolutely insane, Jacob, that he basically just goes dibs.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is, like, these native humans are mute, and this was sort of an part of the plot. And I thought at some point, because they talk about how, like, we don't know why they're mute. Their speech functions seem to be capable, but they can't talk. It must be in their brain. Mm-hmm. And he kind of communicates with her. She never speaks in this movie. So they kind of communicate non-verbally. But I actually thought there was going to be another twist I didn't even know about where she was going to speak at some point, because there's kind of some foreshadowing of that when she's like telling him not to speak. So I thought, yeah.
So in the book, and again, I have not read the book. This is all from a summary that I grazed through. The apes are so sophisticated, Jacob, that they do the brain surgery that obviously Zira has been doing. Cause obviously Dr. Zaius says that he has no problem with the brain surgery, but he also thinks it's a little ungodly. But in the book, they do this weird thing where they tap into the speech patterns of the humans, because the humans cannot talk like in the movie, and they live their past lives like through reincarnation and say, like, 200 years ago when we were normal, we stopped talking because we got little helper monkeys to do everything for us. So basically, we just got so dumb. It's almost like the people on WALL-E, right? Or it's almost like an AI allegory, or like a Siri allegory.
Well, that's super weird.
We just got so stupid. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I just thought in this movie, obviously the apes just speak English. They just evolved to also speak English.
I assume they just
greatest
found
language ever invented, obviously.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
But I actually thought they were like laying the threads for a twist that the humans were going to be capable of speech the whole time. They were just hiding the fact that they could speak from the apes to like hide their true intelligence or something like that. So I was kind of almost expecting her to speak at like the end of the movie, and then it never happened. I was like, damn, she just couldn't speak the whole time, I guess.
Interesting. Yeah, and this kind of gets to where we're going to get to meeting apes, because they go skinny dipping, you know, very cool, 4K.
Is that what you do again? You
flash that butt.
You're on an alien planet, Mike. You take your clothes off immediately. You dive in that water.
We're not sampling the water. We're just jumping in straight up. Yeah. But this, again, sets up that they get their clothes stolen, so they kind of recover the rags, and then they kind of blend in with the normal human population. Yeah. It's one of those contrivances, like you're saying, Colin, that has to happen.
Yes, that's the other one that bugged me. Thank you for pointing that out.
Well, the humans, like, stole all their clothes and gear for some reason.
They're just curious little scamps. seems like, I don't think that was in the book. Like, we need to get them in rags so they could conceivably just be thought of as primitive.
He calls himself Tarzan and her Jane at one point. So there's a lot of like that going on too.
But also Taylor does stand out from these humans, because they're all like, they look like Neanderthals almost. They almost all have like brown hair and stuff. And then he's like this dirty blonde, blue eyed, old cowboy. Who definitely doesn't look like any of these, savage humans or whatever.
Well, should we say our hyperbaric chamber cracked? That's what's going on with our faces right now. That's why we've got these beards. Yeah, Jacob, don't shave by the end, Bright Eyes, because I'll be upset.
What are you doing? Scraping the hair off your face.
Why have you done that, Bright Eyes?
Well, in my time, only kids your age wear beards like this. Beards, I don't go in for fads.
Mike, he squeezes in a hippie
over 30.
He does. He yells at hippies. Here's the thing about Charlton Heston, because he did those weird Bible movies. And for people who are my dad's age, so like baby boomers, he's too old for them, where it's like his parents liked that he did those epics. But then when my dad's a teenager, when he's like hit rock bottom and he starts doing weird sci-fi movies where he does this shit where he's like, you stupid hippies, I'm shaving myself. Like, I'm not kidding. Omega Man 2 is him going like, you fucking hippies, like, out of the way. And he's like nudging people, like knocking stuff over. This whole job, I don't know who our equivalent would be, because I was trying to think who else could do this role. And I landed on maybe Sean Connery. Maybe Sean Connery could be as abrasive and weird. It would take a more sinister edge. But who is our generation's Charlton Heston that's an old weirdo that like Christopher Walken, who used to do serious stuff and then just kind of became a joke, right?
Well, I'm thinking, I mean, this is kind of the same generation, but Clint Eastwood is a lot like Charlton Heston.
Yeah.
But they're both kind of the same era.
Yeah. That's interesting.
But he's an old cranky conservative guy now, so it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is like, it takes a certain, the way he's playing this too, it's very like, again, I don't think he's the most qualified to have been the hero, but he's the hero we got, you know, but it's such an iconic role. The character is kind of wild.
He is capital A acting, Mike. Like, yeah. Nobody does this anymore. Like, nobody does a monologue like him where he's like, well, well, well. Like, you want to watch him describe things he's doing where he's like, you stupid idiot, Nova. Well, look at these trees. And he's just kind of like, as it's like going around, you're like, every word you say is fascinating.
Yeah. Nobody will listen to me except even like the Landon's backstory. Like, he's like, hey, what's your deal, man? Never mind. I'll tell you what your deal is. You don't get these lines. These are my lines now. And I'll tell you.
He's almost fighting the other actors for words.
Yeah, Mike. Like, that's he's true. Like, I'm telling your whole backstory because fuck
amazing
you.
Amazing that they could shut him up for a whole middle of the movie.
Incredible. Yeah.
And again, like, so this plot contrivance of getting shot in the throat. And then so a big part of this movie is like the tension is that he can't speak to like say who he is because of this throat injury.
Right.
And I'm kind of surprised that went on for so long too.
He can't speak to say, don't castrate me.
True.
Yeah. He's trying to like steal paper and write on it and stuff. But
which again, he probably could have pointed at the paper and done a pen gesture instead of just aggressively grabbing. But you know, he's Taylor, baby.
He's doing his thing, you know.
He gets what he wants.
He's a wild card.
Let's move forward because I want to point out there's maybe one thing that they write around. So the humans are abducted.
We lose all of our guys. And I did want to say, like, Dodge ironically couldn't dodge a bullet. Landon could not land on his feet. And Stuart just became, I guess, stew, sinking in the primordial soup.
Right. Show.
So their again, names this is kind of alluded to their death, and Taylor needed to be stitched up, you know.
Which one's the one that gets lobotomized later?
That's Landon.
That's
Dodge gets shot in the spinal column. Very, good aim from these apes, by the way.
Yeah, they all have very depressing like ends. And again, I'm fascinated that they spent so much time in the beginning of this movie with like just these astronaut characters, only for like none of them to live past like the first 30 minutes, other than Landon, who's like lobotomized and is not like sentient anymore,
right?
Or whatever.
Right. But if this wasn't called Planet of the Apes, though, and you're watching this, it's like, oh, it's a space exploration movie, and then the hunt scene happens. You're gonna be like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Dude?
Like, I'm sure it would be. They're
That's
building
what I was
into
thinking.
This security, right?
Yeah, but also you're going into it knowing that the movie is called Planet of the Apes, so you're expecting
That's
to see
the
apes
one
show up at some point.
Thing they've got going for themselves is that the movie is called Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Just keep waiting. We're gonna give them to you. Yeah, yeah.
I want to see these apes, man.
If it was just called Space Explorers, you're like, oh.
Madhouse.
But I think part of this is just the pacing of a movie made in 1968 is a little different than modern movies. But I'm just fascinated that it does have so much like, so much going on that I feel like they could have you know made the plot of this movie and even into two movies or something because it does bounce around so much and all of a sudden it's a courtroom drama for like 45 minutes and then it's this this last 30 minutes where they're like traveling across America or whatever.
They are discussing evolution, like you said. They're looking at models and going like, well, this is what I think. And you're at a PTA meeting in the South right now.
Of course,
essentially two people arguing about evolution. Yeah.
Our antagonist of the movie, Dr. Zaius, who is like the lead scientist and the keeper of the faith. And Taylor like points out, he's like, that seems like a contradiction. I don't know. He's like, no, there's no contradiction there. Faith, there's no faith and science can coexist.
Exactly. And that's like, we're still dealing with that in Florida. So timeless kind of debates happening here, obviously, like science, empirical evidence. Yeah. I think that's what I like too. It's like, man, Dr. Zaius, you don't care about evidence. This guy sucks, you know? But it's like, that's kind of the point. So to it's have him.
The 60s is like, that was only a couple like decades after the whole evolution thing kind of first started being a theory discussed. And then it's like, so yeah, it was a big topic in the 60s for sure too.
Yeah. So once he's captured, we kind of meet the main eight players, Colin. I didn't want to derail where you were heading, but.
No. I was about to say that's Morris Evans playing Dr. Zaius. Now, Jacob, just based off of, again, Dr. Zaius. Did you go into this movie thinking, well, he'll be one of the friendly apes or he'll be like around for a while or he'll be a good guy by the end of the movie?
Yeah, I wasn't sure because I knew there was like another one named Cornelius or something. I was like, maybe Cornelius is the good one. I didn't know Dr. Zira or her nephew, whatever his name was.
Lucius. Yes.
I don't know why I know these. And that's, Julian I'm happy is that you the guard, just saying.
Yes. Yes. Julian is a Buck Carterian. And then to go back up top, just real quick, the big standout actor, Roddy McDowall as Cornelius. Roddy McDowall is going to go on to be in four more of these.
Wow. And the TV show.
Yeah. So kind of becomes a Planet of the Apes guy. He really informs the performances.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when these apes show up, I was like, damn, that makeup is looking good. You know, obviously they would never do it that way now because it would just be CG or, you know, like the whole, like the new ones do with Andy Serkis and that, which is like, motion obviously capture. Now we have the technology to do that. But that physical makeup is for the time, like it still look. I think it still holds up really well. It looks really good.
Yeah. And Roddy McDowall kind of, he's the other actor that I think helped get this off the ground. Like once you had Heston, it's like, okay. And then McDowell signs on and it's like, whoa, okay. This is like classy too. It's not just like a B movie shit show. And he,
too bad they couldn't get Malcolm McDowell.
Oh, geez. Yeah, true. Probably could have.
I don't need him.
But they do a really great job. I think all the lead three ape actors really do a great job, like emoting, and you really get a sense of their character. You know, Zira, Cornelius, and Dr. Zaius. They all are like really distinct in their personalities, and the performances do come through. It's really great effects.
They're all scientists, and then... What's interesting is the technology level of these apes. I was trying to figure that out because they have guns, but they ride on horses. They don't know what flight is. They haven't invented flight yet. Mm-hmm. So they're like our level of technology. But they're
came from space. The sky is impossible.
What do you mean you came from the outer space?
Flight is a scientific impossibility.
But they have guns, though, and they have other
semi-automatic guns, too.
Yeah.
I'd argue the main weapon they have is nets.
Yeah. Nets and dragging.
Catching a lot of people with nets. They have some like surgical instruments and stuff. They're able to do brain surgery.
They're doing brain surgery. I mean, they're just kind of, they learn what they do at their own pace.
But as we find out, their culture is kind of stifling the truth about their past. So that kind of maybe goes in there trying to stifle scientific advancement too.
True. But yeah, so Zira is an animal behavioralist. She's trying to study the humans and why they can't speak. Cornelius is an archaeologist who went to the Forbidden Zone and find potential evidence of a pre-ape society that Zaius is skeptical about. And Zaius has a sign-off on all their research. He's kind of the big brother. He shows up every once in a while like, how are those experiments? They're not proving that we're heretics or anything, are they? You know? Like,
yeah. That's kind of what he's doing. It's a great way to put it, Mike.
And he's the one trying to hold everyone back from discovering the truth and advancing a society.
So they
follow some sort of large biblical figure known as the Lawgiver, who seemed to be the first ape to not only walk upright, but you would assume speak as well, to sort of set down these are the tenets of ape shall not kill ape, all this other stuff.
Right. Kind of like the
cool world. Later.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know like in the new ones, there's Caesar, which is that one. I know there's a character named Caesar in the original one, so I wonder.
Bright Eyes is the name of Caesar's mother when we get to those films.
That's
there's a
right.
million
yeah,
homages.
James Franco like,
that's
calls
right.
you like, oh.
Hi, Bright Eyes.
And have you guys have not seen any of the sequels of this film, the 70s ones?
I have seen all of them once, and I barely remember them. They all blend together, and I know that it is a cocktail of madness. I truly
it
cannot
is.
Wait.
But we do get introduced to this original Caesar Prime, let's call him, like in this series, you know? And I can't remember if that becomes the Lawgiver or not. But we do get in this film, at least, setting up this very interesting world where they do have a religion with the Lawgiver, and just like a little bit of... It hints at like a much deeper society, even though we're technically in the village of the apes or the settlement of the apes. Like they do a good job of making it feel like more expansive than it is, even though we're only seeing like four or five rooms, like the cage.
And what do you guys think? 20 extras at most on screen at any time, right? Fully aped out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At one time, like 20 max, you know what I mean?
They have some big action scenes, like when they're catching the humans, when he escapes later, obviously, and then even at the end when they're on the beach.
Jacob, can you imagine riding a horse when you can barely open your mouth and your eye holes that you can see through are about that big? You're like fully monkey prosthetic out.
Yeah. It'd be tough.
I keep thinking of Nope, and I was just thinking of the horse wranglers on this, and I was like, there's a whole story about horse wrangling in Hollywood that I
know
much less about.
How many of these horses survived?
I was wondering how they did the sound recording too, the audio recording, where they're a lot of times when they're speaking lines as the monkeys. I'm wondering if they're ADR'd those lines because it's kind of hard to speak through the prosthetics and the makeup.
And it comes out pretty clear, actually. In 60s movies, you know, I mean, the sound in early 60s and 70s films is just always nice. So
even though we have this great score, it does feel thin, I would say, the mix, right? It's a lot of, not a ton of low end. And it does feel like, at least outdoors, there's a ton of ADR, I think, from Charlton Heston. You know, but I feel like if they did ADR it for the apes, it might have been with the prosthetics on, because it does still feel like it's slightly muffled. So like, even if they did ADR it, I appreciate if they did the prosthetics.
I like when the apes kiss
Zira
and Cornelius do their little kisses.
They're a couple, right? They're a scientist couple. Yeah. They don't want to get their careers sidetracked or be called heretics, so they're trying to tread lightly, but they're fascinated by Bright Eyes, as Zira names Charlton Heston. While he can't speak, she gives him a gift and says, hey, here's that female you keep staring at.
put her in his cage. Maybe
give him a
mate.
Treat.
The Rod Serling draft made it text that there were a romantic relationship between the Taylor and Zira.
Sure.
But,
Zira?
Zira. So you can kind of feel Mark a Hubbard. Little bit of that stay, but it is interesting that instead he's like, let me have a kiss. And
you're basically,
no.
Well, that line.
Yeah, she's
okay,
like,
but
you're so ugly, though.
So damned ugly,
ugly. But it's so, I mean, it's, this movie is so quotable. It's out of this world insane, but just so damn ugly.
And then she blushes a little bit because Charlton Heston is just such manly man.
Oh,
you know? Kind of like,
but he does have that one scene where he's basically just saying, like, yeah, I got to be with Nova because she's like the only woman around here that like I find fuckable. So, please put her in my cage. Oh,
man.
And he's really trying to repopulate the human society, you know?
In the book, he does say that eventually the apes looked like women to me.
Wow. Damn. Okay. French people. Let's go.
Yeah. French people. I mean, come on.
You know what? This is another reason why I'm excited to get to the Tim Burton one. Because I haven't seen it in a long time, but I'm pretty sure there's like Mark Wahlberg and the Helena Bonham Carter who plays an ape.
I think it goes a little heavier.
There's like a romantic interest subplot.
I think she's playing
there.
A Zira, but I haven't seen it in a long
it's
time.
It's probably the only reason that movie, like Tim Burton's interested in doing that movie. He's like, you mean a normal guy?
Will, human.
It's like a weirdo.
That ape will be played by my wife, Helena Bonham
Carter.
That's
like early Guillermo del Toro stuff, Jacob. That's like Shape of Water, Shape of Monkey.
Oh my God. I was watching some behind the scenes from Planet of the Apes, and it was like filmed now, like a retrospective, and they had Guillermo del Toro talking about how he liked this movie. His if he
of
did one
course.
Of these, wow,
yep. That would be awesome, interesting. Dude. That's cool.
I'm just surprised that Tim Burton
slowly healing the whole. Well, you go ahead, Jacob.
Yeah, sorry. I was just gonna say, I'm surprised that he cast Mark Wahlberg instead of Johnny Depp in that role.
Oh,
I think he probably had to.
Probably. Yeah.
We'll talk about it when we get there.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
But so Taylor's, he's being too aggressive. He's healing, and his neck eventually does heal. He does a jailbreak when he's about to get castrated because Julian is like, if only you knew what they were going to do to you. They're talking about castrating him. He's like, oh, shit, I got to get out of here.
Right.
And then that's when we get our famous line.
Yes. And so, yes, let's hit that in a second. What I was going to say about Julian real quick, what I mentioned earlier about kind of covering up one of the plot contrivances is – the taking their clothes or whatever and making them look like other people, you kind of understand when they get to the cages and you meet the gorilla handlers and that Julius is like, you know, like, let me walk you through the insane asylum. Get back. Get. And you see how savage all the humans are, that if Taylor was acting rowdy and he couldn't talk, like, you do kind of see him just being like, yeah, all these fucking weird, like, little animals kind of, like, you know, skittering at the cage. It's like, it'd be like having a bunch of deer around. You're like, get the, you know, like, get out of here.
This look slightly more inquisitive. I don't know. Like,
I guess you'd be gesturing if you were Taylor. You'd be like.
No, he's too wild.
Yeah. Yeah.
These, you know, these apes, they treat them obviously like humans would treat animals in a, you know, if they're kind of mean humans, and we see parallels. I'm excited for this new one, the James Franco one, where you have Draco Malfoy treating the apes badly. Morley. And sort of the
Say
parallels
it. Say the line, Jacob. Say it right now, because we get it right here.
Which line?
Get your damn.
That's right.
Pause.
And again, I was so surprised for that to happen at this moment, because I've been waiting for his throat to heal. I'm like, as soon as this guy can fucking talk, he's going to bust out that famous line probably. And then it's at the conclusion of this big jailbreak where he's running around this ape village. Eventually they catch him again. And that's when he speaks for the first time.
Get your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape. He speaks. Yeah. And there's good stuff in the jailbreak, too, where he sneaks through the church and the little ape child. It's like, look, it's a man. You know,
him.
And like
everyone's getting scared of
seeing a human running around. That's fun.
Yeah, it's cool to see a kid in the fucking makeup, Mike. It's awesome.
And it's real, the contrivance thing of getting shot in the throat. It's like, it has to happen because, you know, in the book, they're speaking French and there's this whole, I need to learn ape, for, you know, so to do it with this English, just shoot him in the neck. You know, whatever.
Yeah, they write around that. That's interesting.
You do what you got to do. But he gets caught. Then now we get into the courtroom drama of like, oh, shit. Well, we know you can talk. So it'll be a big scene if we just unalive him accidentally. Like now we have to have a trial.
It's like, do you remember when the plot of Ted 2, the Seth MacFarlane movie, was Ted goes to court to prove he has a soul? And you're like, okay. Right. Like this is like, is Taylor, you know, like, what the divine, what divine spark is in you that no ape has, or you know, like what, whatever Dr. Zaya says, and you're like, what?
Yeah, it's you know, it's Data. Is Data human? Does he have a soul? Right?
Yeah.
But we're getting like a lot of logical fallacies from the state. Like, if he's so intelligent, then tell us the first law from the lawgiver. And he's like, I don't know your culture.
I'm
like,
well,
fuck you. Like, you're stupid.
Scriptures.
It's like a parrot. Yeah. He's, you know, this is a trick. It's like a parlor trick, and it's like. No, he's like saying your name.
Yeah.
like
and of course, Dr. Zaius, his theory, he knows that like obviously he's some kind of mutant that comes from the Forbidden Zone. And he's the question is he the missing link between, you know, our past ancestors possibly being man and then evolving into these apes? He's the missing link somehow.
That's wild.
Which again is a parallels to, you know, topics in the real world. So.
Yeah, but I really enjoyed this trial. I enjoyed, like, he makes that paper airplane. It's a toy. It floats on the air. And then, like, when I saw as a child Dr. Zaius pick up the airplane and then just crush it, like, not even attempt it, I'm like, son of a bitch. You such
a the truth. And even when he's in the in that cage outside, he's, like, writing in the dirt, right?
Yeah.
Trying to say, like, oh, I can write. And then Dr. Zaius sees that writing. He's like, oh, let me just scribble over this.
Where do you say you're from? I'm from Fort Wayne, Indiana. You say you're from a fort. Even in your lies, you tell truce.
Yeah.
Tell me where your nest is, Bright Eyes.
Plus the others like you.
He thinks exactly, like you guys said, the missing link. There must be a tribe in the Forbidden Zone of humans that can kind of talk. And he knows, okay, if we stop that, we can keep our society together because this planet is not made for two dominant species. And he's kind of right about that.
Mm, true.
Well, yeah, when he's talking to Taylor later and he's like, look, I know you're kind, you're violent, you're the only species that fights each other because you want to and all this stuff. And Taylor's like, you know what? You kind of have some points. Like, that's how I feel about humans, too. That's kind of why I left Earth.
Too.
Like, these humans out here, they eat all their crops, and then they come and eat our crops because they ate all their own food, and they're causing trouble for everybody, these damn humans, you know? Yeah.
Humans are a pestilence that must be eradicated.
And I mean, I agree that we're not great for the planet. I don't know about eradication. I'm a human, but we're a problem sometimes as a species, I think, you know, to the ecology, you know, the planet and stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's basically the argument that, like, eco-terrorists have. Like, humans are, like, the virus of this planet. Yes. That if they were exterminated, then the Earth could flourish.
Yeah, we need to thrive again.
Taylor's like, I'm going to do the ultimate eco-terrorism and propagate humanity on another planet. But I like all the trial stuff, and we get like the see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil little Easter egg, which I loved.
Supposedly Charlton Heston's idea, which is
really
interesting.
I did not know
he was like, you know what they should do? And it's like, Charlton, shut up. Like,
when did that first, was that even first a thing? Like,
I know where, and it might come up in a quiz.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I like that. I was going to say, I have no idea. That's cool.
The lawgiver, you know, gifted me with some trivia questions that we'll get into later once we get
there. Oh, I'm excited for that.
They're all states sponsored and cleared. So don't worry, we won't be heretics at the end of it.
That's good. A madman, Mike. You're a madman.
Madman.
Put you on trial for heresy.
That's right. So he basically says, look, man, let him go to the Forbidden Zone and, like, try to prove you're wrong, man. And he still says, yeah, fuck you, but they do another jailbreak, and then they go to the Forbidden
he
Zone.
He says, anyway. This is where he goes to Dr. Zaius's room, and they're kind of, like, sitting and having a little conversation together, and he says, like, here's what's going to happen. You're not, before it was gelding, you know, like, before it's, like, literally what that is you burn everything off, genital-wise. That's not it. This time he's like, we're going to castrate you.
Fucking lobotomize you, too.
Yeah, we're going to fucking cut your balls off, and then guess what?
Mess with your brain.
Tinker around with your brain. You will be stuck in sort of a living death. Never, never allowed.
Hell, yeah.
Again, you're watching this movie, Jacob. Is this, like, the bleakest film you have ever seen in your life?
And at the same time, Charlton Heston is like, doesn't seem that worried about it. He's like, I'll probably escape out of here.
I've fought a lot of monkeys already, and I'm pretty wily.
I'm pretty strong. If I get a hold of a gun, watch out. You know.
Yeah. Well, then he does say, like, I had other people with me. Like, let me talk to one of them, dude. Yeah. Like, they're smart. And then he sees Landon, and that's like
where,
a big.
Yes.
That's, you know, the fucked up part where I'm like, okay, Landon's here. Turn around. Big scar on his head. I'm like, oh, shit.
Lobotomized
you, you assholes. He just starts saying that. He's like, oh, you had to mess with his brain. Like, he's just like,
cut him.
Saying what it is.
Like, cut him.
Taylor, shut up. Stop.
Yeah. We find Dodge in the museum now. You know, it's like,
that was fucking
wild.
That's I mean, they plasticized him, like they mummified him. Like,
yeah. Well, it's like in real museums, they do take like dead animals and, like, you know, stuff them and stuff and put them in exhibits. Yeah. So it's like the same thing. Right. Yeah.
So you're seeing those two shots. Like, Dutch is kind of like they focus on it, but it's like a quick moment in the escape. But just it shows like the sinister levels that the society goes and how they treat humans, or especially like a dangerous threat.
Yeah, very much. This movie is like an animal rights movie where it's like, think about this is exactly how we treat animals, and this is how they're treating humans, and you wouldn't like it very much, would you?
No, it's animal rights.
No, I wouldn't. You got a point there.
No, stop yelling at me.
Yeah. So we do get another jailbreak, though, and we go to the archaeological site that we've heard so much about that, you know, Cornelius has not been allowed to go there, and that's where we kind of really start to get the pieces together of what's really going on.
It's kind of like a mall, or it's kind of like a broken museum or something, I guess, that exploded or something, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is.
There's like differing levels to it, though. So he's like, okay, so at this level, I found like a smart ape, like whatever, and then we start finding human artifacts, and there's a baby doll.
Yeah, well, my daughter has human dolls. They, mama.
Why would an ape make a human doll that could speak, Dr. Zaius?
So look at these. I got eyeglasses. I've got fucking a heart transplant.
What do you have
thing.
To say to that baby doll? It's like, it is funny that the things that he's like, huh?
Yeah.
That's the smoking gun is the
gotcha,
baby doll. Yeah.
Gotcha, baby doll.
Then, of course, Dr. Zaius is like, we have to blow up these caves, hide the evidence. Okay. Apes should never know the truth.
All the ape military. Fuck this shit. Now, fucking Charlton Heston gets one of these guns. We put him out earlier. They're dope. Apes have invented a gun that's, like, good for their big hands. That's kind of, like, short and stout. It's really cool. Yeah. And he's like, to call everybody off. And Dr. Zaius is like, oh, hey, everybody, like, give it up. And, like, Taylor is like, I will blow your brains out. Like, there's like not even a question for a minute that he will kill Dr. Zaius.
I like how smart he is too. Smart, where he's like hiding up against the rock, and then he sees, you know, Cornelius and
the
Zira.
Sniper.
Yeah. He's held down by a sniper. Zira and Cornelius are like, you're gonna be all right. And he's like, check this out. Oh, help me. Help me. I'm injured. And that's a good say to come out.
That's right. Gotcha. That's right.
Yeah, gotcha. He's a thinking animal. Yeah,
as soon as he gets his hands on his gun, he's like, all right, I'm holding on to this. And they're like, it's going to be okay. You know, I'm in charge of this thing. And then he's like, no, I'm in charge of myself. And I'm holding on to this gun.
Hey, I don't know if you guys know, I'm Charlton Heston. These things, I love these.
You see, thematically, the first time Taylor has autonomy is when he has a gun.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right.
Message, you need a gun.
It's a very libertarian movie of like, don't put restrictions on me. Let me exist.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, it's interesting. Like Charlton Heston, his political views as a person, like obviously people know that he was big into the NRA and stuff. But early in his career, like in around this time in the 60s and stuff, he was very pro civil rights before a lot of people were, and he's very outspoken about it. So he has a mixture of political views where he's like, civil rights, I love guns, basically, libertarian, where he's like,
he's
people
probably,
should have freedom to do what they want.
That was a good word for him. He's probably most famous for our generation, unfortunately, for the segment in Bowling for Columbine.
Yeah, that's what I know him from.
Where he has, I believe now they've noted, dementia was slipping in, and obviously we will talk about something future that he does for Planet of the Apes when we get to that movie. Mm-hmm. And he was still working, but I think was mentally was not at the highest capacity, unfortunately.
Right.
So it is a bummer.
And you can question like Michael Moore's like documentary techniques and stuff.
That?
But obviously he was very pro-gun rights and was a spokesman for the NRA for a long time and stuff, but did end up getting like dementia later in life. So.
The famous quote, you can take it from my cold dead finger or my cold dead hands, right?
Yeah.
And that wasn't in this movie, shockingly. That line would have fit perfectly. Hand over the gun, Bright Eyes, you can take it from my cold dead hand.
Guess what?
Yeah. Zaius,
Bright Eyes, no.
Yeah.
So basically, he captures Dr. Zaius, ties him up, and he's like, all right, I'm getting out of here with a horse. I'm taking my woman.
Give me 50
Nova.
Bullets.
Nova. Here's what I'm amazed by. At this point, he has not said to Cornelius, like, I need a shirt. I need one of your weird leather. He's basically 50 like
the ammunition, my
Nova.
Woman, and my horse.
He says, I need 50 bullets. That's so funny that he specifically says, you know why that is? Because if somebody comes after me, I'm going to kill 50 of you fucking apes.
I counted the extras. He only had 50 of you.
Yeah, guess what? I can wipe this whole planet out. But he grabs Nova, does the kiss to Zira. I mean, it is fucking incredible. Zira and Cornelius, I mean, Jacob, again, not to talk about the features of these movies, but it's they are set up as our primate protagonists, you could say. So what did you think of these characters, given that this is the last scene that you see them in, and that Dr. Zaius is he doesn't know what he's going to, and he's like screaming off it like as he leaves, like, you're crazy.
It's interesting because it's a very downer ending, because they're like, oh yes, we've proven, we won't be tried for heresy and treason because we've proven,
of course,
your theories. And then right after he leaves, and then like, okay, blow up these caves. And guess what? We are trying you for treason because we're hiding the evidence. And that's the last we see of them. So who knows what's going to happen to them, but it seems they're about
really
to be tried.
It really doesn't help Zero and Cornelius at all. Like, they do the evidence,
goodbye.
But the state. Yeah. Which is
good
crazy.
Luck with all that ape stuff.
I have 50 bullets. Bang, bang, bang.
Good luck with the heresy.
Taylor, we're good. They're trying us now. Taylor, help. We saved you. Taylor.
Yeah, you have your ball still.
Where are you going to go? He's like, oh, I'll just follow the shoreline and see what happens.
That's true.
But it is a down. Yeah, just give me a bullet and a girl and a horse. It's all a cowboy really needs, right?
That's right. He's just going to go repopulate the human society with him and Nova.
9 months at a time.
Describe these shots, Jacob, because I think the way that it's constructed, you see a lot of backlit, interesting things as he's approaching. You're not really positive what's going on, right?
Right. He sees some wreckage of stuff. So he's going along the beach, sees some kind of wreckage.
Me and Nova.
You see like the back of a statue with like a crown on it or something. You're like, what the heck is that? It zooms in. And I did love that shot where it like zooms in between the crown. You just see him. He's like, his mind is blown.
Damn it all to hell. You blew it up.
You made it.
Would you guys understand what was happening? I guess I would have assumed I was in the future the whole time, but then at a certain point, because everybody was speaking English.
But think about the real world implications, like the 60s, the height of the Cold War, you know, we were worried about like nuclear annihilation of just blowing up the whole world. So it's like, that was a big fear at the time.
That's true.
And we talked about Fallout last week. I mean, that kind of ties in too.
Again, a lot of bomb stuff happening. We've got Godzilla's and Fallout and Oppenheimer. Now this, like, that's what it implied, right? We had another nuclear war and like,
we blew ourselves up. Yep. We annihilated ourselves by trying to fight our neighbors.
Yeah.
The twist of this film franchise is, and it's so incredible, is it's not Star Trek, it's Mad Max. And you're like, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's weird.
Yeah, it's a secretly a post-apocalyptic movie, which has now been done a couple times, like that show The 100 on the CW, which I watched the first couple seasons of, where it's like post-apocalyptic, but you don't know. You think they're on an alien planet, but then it's like, oh, actually, this is Earth, but we have like, you know, we went through nuclear winter, and now it's like a pre-technological society. Also, like Horizon Zero Dawn, the video game, is a
right.
Lot of, that's the big twist of that.
Planet of the Horizon Zero Dawn. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
No, that's like the famous scene, you know, it's like, okay, mankind did it to themselves. And again, that's like the parable. And that's like the Twilight Zone moment, like an hour and 48 minutes to have this one shot, you know,
literally the last shot of the movie.
Yeah.
And it just kind of slowly pans out as he's like kneeling on the sand, like just so exasperated. And Nova's there. Like she doesn't understand the implications of what he's doing either. She's
like, what is this from her? Like, I get, he seems upset, but okay.
But again, I thought she was hiding her ability to speak this whole time, because there's earlier scenes where she's like, no, don't speak, don't speak. Right. I'm like, these humans can secretly speak. I know it.
He's screaming, and the last line is her saying, it's the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
How'd she know that's what it's called?
Lady Liberty.
But I'm interested to see, you know, the sequels, where they go from here. I know Charlton Heston, I think he's in the next one a little bit, but he's not like the main character, right? And he's not the main. He's not in any of the sequels after that. So I'm excited to see where this.
I live in the Statue of Liberty now. I live at the top with Nova. She's my girlfriend, and we kiss, and I say, "Hello, monkeys. How are you?"
We trade the copper from the statue with the apes. Yeah. You know,
that's right.
It didn't geld
me. Would be a good place to live. Yeah,
in the apocalypse, that's a
Fallout type base. Yeah, the crown, like where they fought Magneto that one time.
Yeah. The issue is, you get in there, you find a Magneto, Mike. That's the problem.
Oh, it's better than finding a toad, I suppose. or you'd find a beast, maybe. But yeah, I mean, that's the Planet of the Apes, you know? Like, what is human rights?
Classic
what
movie.
Are rights? What are what's the state and religion power over things? What is censorship and hiding the truth? Like, there's a lot of things happening. It's kind of a neat little movie.
It's wild.
Yeah. Definitely.
Well, I think now is probably a good time. I was going to say, let me ask you something, but how about I ask you several somethings and get into our new segment, which is now to be known as You Quizzed It Up, You Maniacs. You Quizzed It All to Hell.
Wow.
Planet of the Apes quiz right after this.
Let's do it.
But yeah, Taylor's big rebuttal to Flight is Impossible is like, you ever see a paper airplane?
But he blows their mind.
Like, have you seen birds?
Yeah.
There's no birds in this? What do you guys eat?
That's what I'm saying. They have these advanced guns, but they ride horses, and they've never heard of flight. So
what do you do? What
do
monkeys
all their
eat?
Energy in designing guns?
Is that one of your questions, Mike? What do monkeys
no,
eat?
No, it should have been. Yeah.
Are they vegetarians?
I believe gorillas are omnivorous, but mostly they're eating vegetables. Like, they will eat meat. Okay. I think chimpanzees are omnivorous, too. I think they eat meat sometimes. Because they have canine teeth for a reason.
They don't just eat these things called bananas. That's not
true. I think they are omnivores, like humans. But
yeah,
in this movie, obviously, we see when they first meet the humans, like, oh, they're vegetarian, you see. They're eating these melons or whatever.
But they're not – I mean – there's no, you weren't at all expecting a third act twist of like getting that meat grinder, Jacob. Like they, you know, eat these.
Well, it's interesting when they're catching all those humans, some, you know, they kill some of them. They've got them like strung up and stuff. And then they capture other ones for their zoos. And
they're taking the photos too. Like that scene, that scene is really iconic.
Yeah.
Well, some of that is state sponsored too, because some of those are going to the science experiment. Like that Zira needs those apes.
Right.
Sorry, real quick. And then because we're back, we're going to jump into Mike's incredible quiz. We're excited here. The state sponsor just made me think Zira's young nephew who comes for the ruse, and it's like, yeah, these rich fat cats are going to put this human in like a zoo and like charge people to see him and stuff. You're like, what is this little hippie rant in the moment? It's exactly like Charles Heston going like, of course I got to shave my face. I'm not like you fucking young bloods.
But then he tells him, yeah, never trust, don't trust anybody over 30.
Like, 60s hell yeah, right? Politics. It's incredible.
So good. You beat Nick Monkeys.
There is like a sci-fi trope of like being captured by aliens and put in an alien zoo, right? And I was thinking like that's not a bad way to live. Like you probably live in relative comfort and stuff. They provide you food and stuff like that.
You see, so my species requires sushi aliens, every day. I must have it. Like,
yeah. Right.
But if you're going to be captured by aliens, that's probably the best situation you could hope for.
Honestly, yeah, it could be worse.
Yeah, you know? I just don't think I could be captured by something that was like as tall as me. You know what I mean? Like, even if there was like a ton of them, I still feel like the nets, xenomorph though, is like their alien. Mm. No, but like Jacob, I feel like I could get away from the nets. I feel like I could like roll or like throw.
Well,
it.
That's what you know. That's what Taylor thought, but then he got shot in the throat, and I think that's the main reason.
And he's an astronaut. He's the best of the best. He's 78 years old. We sent him into space.
He's got the right stuff, I think.
Smokes a million stogies a day while sitting in his spaceship.
You know, still got it. He literally is like, hey, how much water do we have? 8 ounces. You want some? Nah. And then he pulls out his cigar. I don't need water. I just need a smoke.
No, let me just dry out a little.
We're walking 30 miles a day. Let me light this cigar, you know?
God, I'm tired.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Let's jump into it before we get to final thoughts. You quiz it up, you maniacs. Quiz you all.
Wow.
Could not be more excited.
For the ape series, Mike is going to be handling the quiz duties, which I'm very excited for.
Mm-hmm.
To pass on the quiz duties to you for this.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
And I have not read I've read very little about this movie, so I'm going in clean, trying to guess these answers here.
Yeah, and I'm following kind of the format true and false. There's one multiple choice kind of bonus question, but you know, one is true, two is false. I'll try to trick you. Yeah, Jacob's your first time getting to play.
Wow, so exciting.
let's jump right into it, you know.
One true, two false.
One true, two false, correct. And if one of you can keep score, because I'm questioneering, that would be wonderful. Just let me know when you're ready and we'll get this thing going.
I'm excited for this, Doug.
Yeah. I put in a surprisingly difficult to find trivia because so much of this is known. So we'll see how we do. But y'all ready?
And you watched a little doc, you said?
It was an hour and a half, so I didn't finish it. And technically none of the trivia came from that documentary. I just wanted to learn more about how these movies were made because I love them. But I guess number one, Jacob, you good?
Yeah.
All right. So question number one, true false. The band Bright Eyes frontman Connor Oberst is known to be a fan of this movie and named the band after the nickname given to Taylor by Dr. Zira. True or false?
Interesting.
Well, the way you say it, I'm thinking it's some kind of trick where you trick. Where I think it's true, but it's actually false.
I mean, human see, human do. But lock it in and count down and do your reveal.
I'm locked in.
All right. 3, 2, 1, reveal.
True?
Two trues. Wow. Well, guess what? It was false.
What?
I
we
made
didn't
it up.
Get the name from this movie? No. Because I was thinking he must have, like, that must be a reference to this movie.
Right.
I haven't thought of the band Bright Eyes in so long that you guys sang that. I was like, of course.
Of course, it had to be. I thought so too, but it's just a rumor. It's just like a general term of endearment, and we hear it in the song Total Eclipse of the Heart, Turn Around Bright Eyes.
Turn around, bright eyes.
So well, it's not even named after that either. It's just a coincidence.
It is. The turnaround, that's turn amazing. Around, Taylor. You've got to yell at this monkey. Turn around, Taylor. You called that woman breeding stock. You said you were going to populate a planet with it.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Every now and then I get shot in the throat and can't sign language with them.
And I can't talk.
Incredible.
Oh, you got us there. I was thinking that I was like, this is probably a trick, but it's got to be true. That's amazing, though.
Right. Well, here's
can
the
name my
two,
son
then.
Bright Eyes.
I'm just going to name Taylor. All right. Number two, Taylor was originally intended to have, as we said, had a relationship with Nova, and she would be pregnant by the end of the film, at which point Taylor would be killed by a sniper, leaving Nova to ride into the Forbidden Zone with their unborn son. But Charlton Heston rejected this because he wanted to survive to the end of the movie. True or false?
wild that there is a sniper in the movie. So, all right. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I'm locked in.
I am locked in. Yes.
All right. 3, 2, 1, reveal.
False.
False and true. So I tricked you a little bit. It is false, but only because it was a Fox executive who said, maybe we don't put that in because the perceived intelligence of the humans on this planet, it might not be a great thing to have Charlton Heston impregnating her.
Smart.
So that was cut due to executives. But there was
The pregnancy part was true, though.
In the original draft, but that was not... It's not text in this cut of the
Rod
film.
Rod Serling, you fucking weirdo.
Right, so...
They only put the Statue of Liberty stuff in?
Yep, so even in my lies, I tell truths, just like Taylor, but...
yeah.
So that's 1 point, Colin.
I just thought it was true that the pregnancy stuff would be true from an earlier draft.
See, that's what I use to hook you, you know?
Yeah, you curveballed, my friend.
I feel tricked. Right.
I mean, I learned from the best. Like a lot Taylor. Of pirate quizzes.
Yeah.
All right. Number 3. Makeup artist John Chambers not only helped get the film greenlit after extensive makeup tests, but also was responsible for another sci-fi connection in Star Trek by creating Spock's ears and the original series a few years earlier. True or false?
Hmm. Okay.
You locked in?
Locked in.
I am locked in.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, reveal.
True.
True and
false. I say
false. All right. Well, Colin, it's true. That's 2 in a row
what?
For Colin.
I thought you were trying to trick me again.
Nope. John Chambers did Spock's ears.
That's crazy.
For the original series.
Now, I knew that going into this because I am a fan of John Chambers' work. Mike, is that the only trivia question about him? Can I tell another fact about him?
Let me check. There's one effect. I don't think I'm at super risk. Go ahead and share something about John Chambers. Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of the cool thing about I'll keep it loaded until the end then just in case.
I will save that for the end.
Yeah.
Copy that. All right. Well, this is another kind of Star Trek related trivia question then. So number 4, Leonard Nimoy, due to, you know, his involvement with John Chambers, he was offered the role of Taylor because in the book, it's more scientific approach to problem solving. It thought he would bring a scholarly kind of air to the Taylor character as opposed to Charlton Heston. True or false?
Okay. All right. Locked in.
Locked in.
Always. 3, 2, 1, reveal.
I'm going to say false.
Correct. I made it up, you maniacs.
Wow.
Good job.
You can't trick me that much.
If you said Dr. Zaius, that hobgoblin looking face is a monkey, I would have bought that immediately.
Dang, that actually would have been good casting.
I do know one thing about, and maybe I shouldn't reveal it because it might be in your quiz as well.
Another casting thing. Oh, yeah, no, save. There's some more tricks, maybe.
I'll leave it for the end in case. Yeah.
So we're at 2 for Colin and 1 for Jacob. No, 3 for Colin, 1 for Jacob.
3 for Colin, 1 for me.
All right. Well, number 5, I have 10-ish total. This is an easy one. The original concept was for all the female humans living on the Planet of the Apes to appear topless. True or false?
In my dreams.
Now, they don't do porn parodies anymore, but what would this one be? I guess Planet of the Gapes and it sucks, right?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Well, if this was made in the 60s, I could see this being like one of the, like a Grindhouse type movie where they it's like a rated X and they show it at like those, you know, porn theaters or whatever.
When did Barbarella come out? Porno sci-fi, basically, starring real actors. So I'm locked in.
All right. Locked in?
Sure.
All right. Yeah. 3, 2, 1.
Reveal. I'm going false. True. I gotta go false on that.
Jacob's correct. It was true. That was supposed to be the thing.
This movie could have been better. Hold on. This could have been
it was probably a selling point of getting it funded where they're like, look, you don't understand.
Absolutely.
We're going to have a bunch of topless women and people are going to watch and see that.
Girls are like savages. And by savages, I mean beautiful 70s blown out hair, completely naked.
Topless.
I mean, again, there's already some weird gender stuff in here with the way that Taylor talks about women where he's like, yeah, we brought along this one woman just to repopulate the earth, basically, but she died. So
I guess you're my next best option
here.
Mm-hmm. In the trial, is he completely naked? Is he just covering his
junk? They take his clothes off because they're like, we told you to clean the animal.
They look at his entire body, right?
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
I mean, you see.
Can you imagine if his dick was out?
You do see his bare, you know, ass when they run into the water when they're skinny dipping.
No, I saw this in.
If Charlton Heston's long balls were just out in that whole court scene as he was making a paper airplane, Mike.
Oh yeah, fold this plane. Yes. Oh my gosh. Look at the landing gear on that guy.
Oh my god.
Obviously, this was the plan, but Fox censors are like, yo, dog, we like want to release this to a lot of people. But just because the topless was censored, we did get a couple butts and maybe a few flashes of dick sneaking through the cracks of the final
edit. I was
surprised by the bare asses in the beginning.
Yeah, I'm going to watch this again.
Yeah, they definitely should have made an X-rated cut and released that to the late night theaters and had like
a cut.
Only in Italy.
The director's cut.
De apes.
Yeah.
So there you go. They thought of it. They wanted to do it.
It's that they're all topless except Charlton Heston only has a mustache instead of the beard the whole time. And the cigar like never leaves his mouth.
He has a smoking jacket. That's it. It's always open though.
Yeah, you're like, what is this?
Oh, man. So,
so good.
Could have been better. Number six, time to get a little bit more serious. In 1968, the makeup and effects for Planet of the Apes were the first makeup and effects team to receive an Oscar Academy Award for Outstanding Achievement in Makeup before it was created as a permanent award in 1981. True or false?
I already know this. Locked in.
All right. 3, 2, 1, reveal.
True.
True, true. Well, guess what? It's false. It was the second film to ever get recognized for makeup after 1974's Seven Faces of Dr. Lau. William J. Tuttle's makeup. Seven Faces of Dr. Lau, 1984.
Have you guys ever seen that? I've never even heard of that.
No, and I'm just assuming it holds up. You know.
Sure.
That's cool. Do you think they're animals? Like, what makeup could be more complicated than this crazy movie?
Well, it's called the Seven Faces of Dr. Lau, so I assume it's like some guy
who's got seven faces.
Yeah, seven at the same time. It's a real Masters of Disguise situation, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Turtle.
Yeah, he's probably a turtle in one suit. Turtle.
But then it did become an official standardized award in 1981. So this trivia question is kind of tangentially related to the Planet of the Apes. But what film was the first to officially receive Best Makeup and Hairstyling Academy Award in 1981? This is a multiple choice.
1981.
So it's going to be hard to dictate. So I'll just say the answers and you guys can say, and you know, what you think.
Yeah, buzz in first if you got it, Jacob.
Okay.
But I'll say all four at least. So number one, Amadeus with Paul LeBlanc and Dick Smith's work. B, American Werewolf in London, Rick Baker. C, The Fly, Chris Walla and Stephen Duplass. And D, Harry and the Hendersons, Rick Baker. What was the first film to win an Oscar?
I would say B, American Werewolf in London.
Colin, what do you think?
I'm going to go A and say Amadeus.
Rock me, Amadeus. It was B, American Werewolf in London.
There we go. Wow.
And Baker was inspired to get into the makeup craft because of Planet of the Apes. He saw that work, was like, damn, you know what? That's sick.
I mean, there you go.
And that movie does have great makeup, you know? Of course.
And does,
great transformation scenes.
Am I wrong? Does Rick Baker end up doing the Tim Burton? We'll talk about it. I think he does.
I was tempted to say The Fly, too, because I know Cronenberg at the time had some pretty crazy things going on in those 80s.
There. Amadeus. Mm-hmm. What makeup is even, I guess, powdered
just
wigs?
Just old guy makeup.
I think the hair is really old. Carrying more than the makeup. Yeah.
But they are aged. You're right, Jacob. Yeah. He does play an old version.
Yeah. So Jacob gets a point for the American Werewolf in London. Where are we?
3-3? Is it tied up?
We're tied up.
All right, well, I have an odd number of questions remaining, so we should be okay.
Perfect.
All right, so next question, 7. In order to maintain the strict sense of ape hierarchy in the society, the apes and human actors were ordered to segregate themselves during meals and break times on set.
Mm.
True or false?
Okay.
As we mentioned, there's really the hierarchy in the movie is there's three types. There's chimpanzees, there's orangutans and gorillas. Gorillas are the bodies, orangutans are the brains, and chimps are just kind of like the people.
Yeah, they're like the labor, kind of side. Yeah. So all those groups were told to like chimps hang out with chimps, orangutans hang out with orangutans, gorillas. So true or false?
I'm locked in. Interesting.
All right. Yeah. 3, 2, 1, reveal.
I'm going to say false. I'm
saying false.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, this might surprise you. It is false. So you're both correct. But it's not false in the sense that it didn't happen. It's false in the sense that it was mandated by the production crew. It happened just naturally, where during lunch and stuff, the orangutans would chill with the orangutans, the gorillas would chill with the gorillas, the chimps would chill with the chimps, and the humans would chill with the humans. It just happened.
So Charles Heston would just eat with the lady that played Nova.
You think he was going to eat with anybody else?
You're beautiful.
Look, come back to my trailer later.
I guarantee you.
I could run through lines.
That is almost like a sociology class, Mike. Yeah. That is so interesting that those people just inherently group themselves, opposed to, like, if I was doing this and I was a gorilla and Jacob was a chimp, I'd be like, we're friends. We'll hang out at lunch. Like, I wouldn't feel the need to be like, stay back. I'm with my brothers.
My guess would be it's due to the makeup process. Like, you're with you're segregated, like, into different makeup units. You're spending, like, the first 4 hours of your day together, you know, and, like, a lot of scenes together. Like, you're just kind of naturally hanging with them.
I read in the first 30 days, and apologies if this is one of your questions, Mike,
No, you're good.
The diets for all of the actors had to be liquid-based to keep everything on for the lunches. So they're just doing milkshakes and stuff. Fucking think about that.
Yeah, you have lots to drink with a straw. That was not one of my quizzes. And later they try to solve that problem like a Batman neck, like in the Tim Burton one. They're like, how can we eat? So, you know, that we'll probably see that.
Right.
There's ways. But yeah, so that was not true, but that it was mandated, but it did happen, weirdly. Sociology. Couple more here. Here we go. You know, the Planet of the Apes is officially recognized and preserved by the Library of Congress for the National Registry of Film in the United States. True or false?
Locked in.
Locked in.
All right. 3, 2, 1, reveal.
It's a true, classic.
Classic.
Of course it is, you know?
Of course it is. Yeah, that's gotta be dumb. It was officially recognized in 2001, which is the year I think the Tim Burton one came out, but it was alongside 25 other films, including Sound of Music, Jaws, Animal House, Hosers, among others. So it got in the same year that Jaws did. So
cool.
Wow.
Good company to be in.
I'm excited. Again, I'm just excited to watch the reboot with James Franco, where it has so many references to this original one.
Now that right. That's how I feel about Fallout. Like,
I believe at one point they in the background when they're at the little Harry Potter kids zoo or whatever that is, they see a rocket and it says like,
yeah, you see on, you see on TV, like the news of like three astronauts went missing. On a space flight. Yeah.
That's right. Dad's watching the news. That's going to be really cool to go to check that out again.
Yeah.
What's the score right now? Because I have some alt questions.
5-5 is it?
5-5. Yeah.
5-5. Okay. Well,
there we go.
In that case, is this one fun? Okay. Okay. Yeah. We'll do this one. It's quick. All right. Aside from, the role of Taylor, Charlton Heston, besides Charlton Heston, it was offered to several other big Hollywood stars at the time, including John Wayne, Marlon Brando, Steve McQueen, and Rock Hudson. True or false? All of them turned it down.
Interesting.
Marlon Brando, Steve McQueen, Rock Hudson, John Wayne.
John Wayne. I'm locked in.
All right. 3, 2, 1, reveal.
I'm saying false. Who else can do this, Jacob? Nobody else can. John
I'll
Wayne
say true. Why not?
Yeah, well, guess those what? It is true, like, Jacob.
Wow.
I couldn't see any of them doing it. I would think it'd be funny to see a John Wayne version.
Well, Rock Hudson, my favorite. That'd be horrible. Jeez.
Yeah.
Steve Marlon McQueen, Brando.
Marlon Brando, I assume you would do it like Apocalypse Now or something, where you'd just be totally unhinged. But
John Wayne's the only one who would be funny, you know. Well, let me tell you, Dr. Zaius, back in my day, you know, this man had a
Rock Hudson. It ends with him giving Zira a hand to shake as he like gets on the horse. You're like, interesting.
See ya. All right, so now it's one up. All right, I have two.
Wow, I'm ahead.
Three more.
Jacob pulled away. Yeah.
Okay, so
I'm
here's
ready to win
number
my first
10.
Quiz.
A lunch trip to a deli inspired the iconic ending of this film. True or false?
Okay.
Whoa. Okay. I'm locked in. Yeah.
Locked in, Jacob?
Locked in.
All right. 3, 2, 1, reveal.
It's too weird.
True.
It is
too weird. Too specific to be made
weird.
Up.
And it is true. During the early drafts, Arthur P. Jacobs and originally tapped director Blake Edwards were going out to lunch, and the deli had a picture of the Statue of Liberty, and they were like, you know what? That would be a crazy twist ending. And, you know, like, what if it was Earth and in the Statue of Liberty? So that kind of, because they were getting a sandwich at Old Delhi.
And that was the most recognizable landform or like thing that they could landmark.
Yeah, what else could it have been, would you think, Jacob? Because can I say why I think it works?
French?
The human face. Like, what else has a human face on it that you immediately recognize? Fuck, we're humans. It's not a monkey's head. You know,
that, the Eiffel Tower could be explained away.
If it was a pyramid, Mike, you'd be like, it's just a weird structure. Like,
but what if it was like the Abraham Lincoln Memorial, but Lincoln was an ape?
We'll get there.
Again, I think that is the book. That is the reveal. Yeah. The reveal of the book.
Wow.
So can I say two facts? We just finished the quiz.
No. I have a couple more, but say some facts.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh no. Go ahead. No. I was going to say if we wrapped it up.
I have two more. Then if we have a tie, so be it.
I thought Jacob was kicking my ass here. I still got a chance.
I'm ahead by one now.
Okay. So this is what we kind of talked about earlier. See no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. The iconic moment with see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil was one of the few original thematic elements carried over from the book as well. True or false?
I'm locked in.
All right. Jacob? Locked in.
3, 2, 1, reveal.
False.
False.
I'll say true.
Colin, it is false. It is false.
Wow. I didn't know what that meant, but I just... sounded true, I guess.
Fair. So, I don't know if Charlton Heston suggested, but they said a lot of that scene was kind of improvised, like just kind of back and forth. Let's kind of have some chemistry stuff. What I did want to say is the origins of that, to shout out Shogun, is the Sanzaru, which is the three monkeys. It's a thing from Tokugawa's death shrine area. And that's the first instance, 17th century Japan. The three
that
monkeys.
Makes, okay. If you told me it was in a French book, that's why I was like, no, not a chance. The guy who invented it. If we were all saying the thing from Planet of the Apes, the book, people would be like, well, you know what that's from, right? Like, there's no way I would have made it this far in life.
It's wild, though. Sometimes things come, you know, things invent things that you think were always around, like the movie The Bucket List invented basically the word bucket list. It didn't exist before that movie.
That's true. I hate that. Yeah.
People don't realize
so
that.
And not a popular movie. That's true.
Right. Yeah. But the term stuck. But see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil was a 17th century Japan thing.
Monkeys and they're covering their ears and stuff.
Yep. There's also versions that go back, like not the exact three, but a version of this idea, like second or fourth century China. Like it's kind of the three monkeys as we know them was first Tokugawa.
Somebody did that for their art project and was like, look what I did. And their mom was like, that's great. I'm kind of commenting on life, aren't I? And they're like, I guess so.
Sure. I think you fight them in Sekiro too. So yeah, there you go.
Sure. There you go.
So now it's time, right, I believe, well, right?
Yeah, it's tied again.
Oh, whoa.
I should have known that was false. I was just like, I don't know. I guess that's impossible.
I only have one more question, so I hope one of you gets it wrong. One of you gets it right. Number 12. Robert Gunner, who played Landon, played his last role of his career while in Planet of the Apes. True or false?
Like this was his last role of his career?
Last film role of his career, yeah. True or false?
Well, he got lobotomized after this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm locked in.
All right. 3, 2, 1, reveal.
False.
Okay. True. We got a split. And Jacob.
Let's go. What is it?
True.
It's true.
This is the last movie he did. And I do think it's funny because he spends the whole time just getting shit on by Taylor.
You idiot. You fool. You care
everybody
about
you
humans.
Know is dead. You bitch. You're sad or something.
Planting that American flag
in
the beach.
Everyone I know is gone.
You have feelings.
A flower, beautiful, untouched by man.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
Congratulations.
He's not that old in this movie. I wonder why he stopped acting. Maybe he wasn't getting roles or something.
Linda Harrison didn't do much after this either. She was just kind of, I'm over it. It was fun.
Sure.
So, what if it was Linda Hamilton?
Interesting.
Linda Hamilton didn't do much after her movies either. So.
The time travel, though. So good crossover opportunity.
Yeah,
congratulations.
Well, I'm happy that I won my
what
first
final
quiz.
Scores.
Well, let's see. Let me count all these tallies.
11-10, I think. Maybe
7-6.
Or 7-6.
8-7.
8-7.
Not bad. 8-7. Nice.
8-7.
Well, I'll tell you my.
Sorry, please get right out.
I have my one casting trivia that I have as well.
Great.
I believe so. When they were doing the first makeup test, Edward G. Robinson was in that makeup test, who was an actor that played a lot of gangster roles and stuff like that in the 40s and 50s. And I thought that was interesting because I'm like, I know Edward G. Robinson. And I guess he was in the Dr. Zaius makeup in the makeup test, but for some reason wasn't in this movie. So
do you know what other movie Edward G. Robinson's in?
Swiss Family.
He's the co-lead of Omega Man.
Oh. Wow. What about that?
Very interesting.
Another Star Trek shout out is Shatner's been in Twilight Zone, you know?
Of course. Right.
The famous most famous
gremlin
one.
On the plane.
Gremlin on the plane.
There's something on the wing. Mm-hmm. I just want to blow out two pieces of trivia real quick. That was an awesome quiz, Mike. Congratulations on winning.
Yes, very
Jacob.
Good. Very good quiz. I give you
quiz it all to hell.
Quiz all to hell.
Quiz us all. Was this all to hell? John Chambers, just to talk about the John Chambers of it all, the makeup artist. And I held off on talking about him because I wasn't sure how much he was going to come up in our quiz here. But the life that this guy had, when I said he had another interesting thing going on, after this, when he did the most iconic makeup artistry ever, invented this process of prosthesis, basically, of applying these things on and you know, doing these things, he worked for the CIA. Doing makeup for spies in missions. He is the basis.
People that were dressed like apes for a mission.
You have to go to Russia and you have to be a chimpanzee.
They're hiding in the Russian
Harambe.
Zoo.
And he didn't get an info on him.
Well, Jacob, he did a very famous mission. He is, of course, the John Goodman character in Argo. He did the fake spy mission, fake movie that got those people freed in Argo.
Wow.
So, John Chambers rules. Yeah. Argo, fuck yourself, of course. Damn. Of course, never forget.
That's
just
awesome.
The last awesome makeup fact is that when they were doing these tests, and I sent you guys the makeup tests originally of James Brolin, noted actor, did the original screen test of what they thought they were going to go with, which was very
Josh
reduced
Brolin's
in the
father,
simian look. Josh Brolin's Thanos' father himself, as Mike pointed out. And when they settled on John Chambers going for the more full simian version. I want you guys to look up a picture of this. Jerry Goldsmith, who did this weird score, and we didn't talk about the score. Jacob, try to hum the score. Right? It's like static, weird, disconcerting
noise. There's like weird percussion moments and stuff too.
Like it's weird scatting that comes in, right? He orchestrated all that, Jerry Goldsmith, in a monkey mask. He asked to be put in and wear one of the masks and did the orchestration while as a monkey the entire time. Look it up. It's crazy.
I did love the Jerry Goldsmith connection, of course, because
it's so weird. Yeah.
You know, he's famous for doing Star Trek, you know, a lot of the original Star Trek movies were scored by Jerry Goldsmith, as well as the Voyager theme and the DS9 theme and the TNG theme, I believe. So,
Alien. He's got a great filmography, honestly.
Yeah, he's killing it.
That's awesome, though, that he did the ape mask for this. He did Boys from Brazil as well. So look at that. A lot of Chinatown.
Sure, worked with this director. That makes sense.
Collabing. Very cool.
Sure.
So yeah, shout out to the score, but it is very weird and staccato. So the fact that
he didn't do the
character to do it is fascinating.
That is hilarious. And he didn't do the original Star Trek theme from the TV show, but he did do a lot of
the motion picture, Search for Spock.
But he does the vocals for the Enterprise song.
Yeah, he sings that alt rock song that Mike loves.
Oh,
flying through space.
Quite a long road. It's going to be my alarm soon. Well, that's awesome. I love connecting things to Star Trek when we can.
Yeah.
That's right. And then, well, this could be an episode of Star Trek. You know, it's very similar, you know, that 60s side. I mean, the original Star Trek, really, where it's like Shatner is another one that would be really funny to play Taylor, I think.
And there's like, well-known comic book series that is Star Trek meets the Planet of the Apes and is a crossover. I'll say real quick, just on that note, Marvel now owns the rights to everything Fox-wise, and they did three imprints to kick off their new comic book line, 20th Century Comics. I have a couple of them behind me. I have two of the runs in that they did an original Predator run, an original Alien run, and Planet of the Apes. Now, that Planet of the Apes run that they did was 5 issues, and it is a prequel to the Andy Serkis movies where you see the world succumbing to the virus. They just announced they're doing a new series called Beyond the Planet of the Apes that is about Cornelius and Zira doing their little mission before Taylor comes to the planet. So you see him doing archaeology. So that's pretty cool. Wow. You guys want to read that? That's coming out like this year. That is new continuity stuff. So
Cornelius is kind of like the Indiana Jones of ape world.
Sure.
Hey, but
the gorillas wear Nazi leather, basically. So he is kind of like fighting Nazis.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Oh, man.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, and that's been You Quizzed It Up, You Maniacs, Quizzed You All to Hell. And thank you for playing. It was a lot of fun putting it together, and we'll see.
That was a great quiz. What excited for these sequels. And,
Let's get to final thoughts. You know, Ape Shall Never Quiz Ape. That's why I'm the one quizzing you guys. Just make sure we're above board.
Help, the human's about to escape.
Get your paws off me, you dirty ape!
He can talk.
He can talk, 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 he can talk.
I can sing!
Ooh, help me, Dr. Zaius.
Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius.
Humans are the only species that kills for fun.
They're shifty, you can't trust them. Look at them always grabbing things.
They turn their... the world into a desert, and then they come into your world and turn that into a desert.
Mm-hmm. They put them in that cage, and he's like, go on, mate.
It doesn't take much, I guess, depending.
No.
No, but we're back. Final thoughts, Planet of the Apes. I love this movie. I'm glad that you got to experience it for the first time, Jacob. Con, you got to see it, you know, again, and kind of new appreciation. I do have different perspectives after not having seen it for at least, 7 or 8 years.
Yeah,
no, I'm excited to be doing this franchise and doing a franchise like Star Trek where we start with some older movies because it kind of, it's something different where it's like Pirates, they were all starting in the 2000s. This is like we're watching a movie from 1968 and I enjoy watching things that I've never seen before like this and expanding my horizons of what I've, what I've seen. So,
yeah.
Very excited to get into the sequels of these movies, and from what I hear, they're super crazy and stuff. So I'm just excited
do. We're going to do a segment going forward, I think, that is Jacob's first reactions, where we have to be like, "What did you think of that movie watch?" But I also want to do this one at the end, where you're like, "Okay, Jacob, four more original movies of this series, and you just said Taylor's not in a lot of them. What would you?" Yes, is the rest. So you think the next one is a political? Do you think it's the trial of Zira and Cornelius?
We give them
the title? Well, I know that's the title. Okay. Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
So what do you think happens in Beneath the Planet of the Apes? I have not seen it.
That's a great question. That's a great question. Yes. I have no idea. I guess I assume there's going to be some... I mean, I think... that Zira and Cornelius are going to be in it, but there's going to be a new human main character to pivot away from Charlton Heston, who probably didn't
every
want to
human
back
we
people.
Know is dead. So who would that be in your mind? It's Nova.
Maybe there's like a human in the tribe that is smarter than the other ones and somehow learns to speak.
Guess.
I don't really know because obviously these astronauts came here from the past. And so I don't know how you would have another human point.
It's the year 3,500 or something like that.
But I do think that like ape politics are going to be like a big part of the next one or whatever. Of like deciding like, ape society. What should we do now that we know there's this smart human out there?
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But where the Beneath comes in, I really have no idea how that kind of ties in.
It's only going to get secret, more Star Trek-y. That's all I'm going to say.
Society or something under the ground.
There we
I don't
go.
Know.
Mike's coming in his mouth. He's got it right.
I'm excited to watch it next month. Yeah. My big dilemma, of course, is that we have this new one coming out, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. And I want to see, here's the thing is because if I go see that in theaters or I see it whenever it comes out, I would want to go back and watch at least all the new ones, right? Starting with the Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
You know what? Yeah.
Yeah.
Jacob, I was kind of on the fence about that, where I was like, it's a new whatever it is. I don't think you need to do that. Every trailer I've seen recently starts with Andy Serkis doing interviews being like, well, the legacy we've created with these characters, right. Where I'm like, wait, is it super tied into those movies? Well,
of course, it is tied into those movies, but it's the biggest time jump between the last one. So it's been a couple hundred years. So they've progressed, because those movies are basically all a prequel to what we know of Planet of the Apes, where it's setting up the world of the apes. Mm, and now it's like a couple hundred years time jump, and apes are the dominant society now. So it's getting to basically that 2001 Tim Burton stage of it.
You have no idea what's coming. You just have no idea what's coming. And listeners, too.
But I just don't know what to do.
You also hold off. Yeah, what do you? Do I wait?
Because in 6 months, we're going to watch those movies. So if I watch them now, then the impact in 6 months is going to be lessened because I just watched them. So I don't know what to do. Maybe I'll just wait on seeing the new one, but I do want to support it.
I think we got to go to theaters for it, though. I think we got to, if we're in ape frenzy mode right now, I think we got to help out the box office. Because we talked about I don't think it's going to make a lot of money, and neither do you guys. So
I'm surprised that it even got made, because it's been 7 years since the last one. And they made those first three all pretty quick in succession. And they all kind of work together as a sort of trilogy.
Well, again, we'll give our opinion on those. To me, it very much seems like that guy who directed them, Wes Ball, was supposed to do those Mouse Guard movies for Fox. Disney bought Fox, said, you're not doing those. It seems like this came together very quickly.
Matt Reeves did the second and third one of the new ones.
It seems like what I just said about the comics, where they're like, we should be doing something with this. We don't know what that is, but we should be doing something with this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, I guess.
The fact that it even got made at all, it's like, it's
surprising.
It's been 7 years. I guess we're going to make another ape movie. It's tied into those other ones that people liked for the most part. Yeah.
Jacob, you just watched one you like.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, Colin, that was a great one. Those comics, we have Alien, Predator, and Planet of the Apes. I love this franchise, but it's definitely the lesser of those three things as far as and Predator has been having a rough time. Alien's been kind of up and down, but this still has the least
just
buy-in.
Found their feet, Mike. Predator with just Prey. Figured it out.
Yep.
We have to
of those franchises, but it has the best new movies of those franchises, which is kind of crazy.
I think Prey is better than, I don't know. I'd have to watch
it. But if you put all the newer Predator movies in, so you're like Predators and all those bad movies.
There's two that I would watch, and one of them's AVP, and that's not good. I can watch it.
We are on the same page there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I said already, I'm a big fan of the 2010s Planet of the Apes movies. I'm a big fan of those ones. I love my guy Caesar, and so I'm excited to get to those.
Can I pitch Ape you guys Together a movie Strong. Real quick?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's called AVA. Alien. Or apes. AVPVA, Alien versus Predator versus Apes.
Yeah. Versus Kong. Okay. You gotta get Kong in there as leader of the apes, right? Kong meets the other apes.
Oh my God.
So it's Alien versus Predator versus Apes versus Godzilla versus Kong.
The rocket lands after an egg has hatched. A xenomorph comes out of it. A Yatcha, a Predator, whatever you call them, uncloaks. And then a rocket lands. And Dr. Zaius gets out, Jacob. Who are you putting your money on? Who wins that fight?
I mean, Dr. Zaius will use his power of government censorship to...
You don't exist, alien.
Yeah.
Not in my government.
What's this nonsense?
Oh, man.
Watch the stunt. He's great, Dr. Zaius. I do love when they're in the cave, and Taylor's trying to be like, look at the evidence, and Zaius is like, My niece does this, and I could explain away any of this however I wanted. And then Charlton Heston, he's like, so what happened to the humans if they were here? Zaius is asking him, and Heston's like, I don't know, a disease or something. It's like, you're just conjecturing too, my guy. Your answer is not any better than his. It's so good.
You're from a fort.
So when it was a plague in the remake movies, is that a callback to Charlton Heston being like, I don't know, a disease wiped him out, or who knows?
I think so, because it's basically showing... Yeah, it's like a prequel to what would cause the Planet of the Apes.
Remember, it's all about Alzheimer's. That movie's wild.
I know. I love it. I'm excited to talk about it. I
love it.
He
loves the James Franco one.
Well, once you see these sequels, too, I think it's going to really inform some of the because there's a lot, we do get the origin of Caesar Prime, as I will keep calling him in these later sequels. So you're going to notice a lot more callbacks. Like, Ape Shall Never Kill Ape, Ape Together Strong. We keep mentioning this stuff from The Lawgiver. Absolutely. None of that has even been presented to us yet, technically.
Yeah. No, it's so, but think about this to like put comparisons in. Mike and I are so like, ooh, we're in the fucking Kirk Shatner era. This is so great. The next generation
I'm
is
like, I love the J.J. Abrams ones.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. The next generation is one movie. It's Tim Burns. And they're like, put that away. And then Jacob's like, but my Star Nemesis. Trek Beyond, baby. I'm all about Star Trek Beyond. It's like, no, we know, dude. We'll get there.
Where's Star Trek?
I'm excited to see the originals.
Right? Yeah.
I was saying to Mike,
Nemesis.
Yeah,
off the pod, like, I know there's one where they go to, they time travel to modern day, like, Earth, and to me, that's like the long voyage home, I hope. So I hope I compare to that.
It's so Star Trek-y. You're so right. It's so
and good. As we get out of 1968 and the original series ending in 69, I can only assume we're going to have more talent crossover between the production of this and TOS, et cetera.
That's right.
During that interim.
We'll see.
But yeah, Mike, did you ever watch the series?
Did you ever?
Okay, that's the only one I would be interested to check out too.
Yeah.
That they technically the timeline did continue after those five movies in that, but we're obviously not going to do that. We're doing Dunstan Checks In instead. So
absolutely, yeah, it's an MVP, all of them.
That's right.
Roddy McDowall again, yeah, he becomes kind of the torchbearer for this too, and like he's in most of these, including the television series. He plays Caesar Prime eventually. Like, that's he stops playing Cornelius. Oh, he does Caesar Prime.
He kinda plays his own son, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah. I love Roddy McDowall in this role. Character. I think he's really emotive. Yeah.
Again, they should have got his brother Malcolm.
Sure.
He would have put a crazy twist on it.
Roddy McDowall, not actually brothers then, but just to point out the guy real quick, because another actor my father just was in love with, I guess, as a kid, because you grew up and he was a very famous child actor. I don't know if you guys know this. How Green Was Your Valley, a huge Best Picture winner. But when my dad was a kid, he was the kid in Lassie. So he would be like, Lassie, come home. Mm-hmm. Like, so, he grew up to do that. A movie you guys should check out, fucking Hell House. A Roddy McDowall horror movie that basically is remade by Scary Movie 2, which is about a bunch of teenagers in a hell house, right? Like, that is the movie they're parodying there.
Yeah.
Roddy McDowall is incredible as a gay psychic in that movie. It's fucking awesome. High recommendation.
You can tell if people are gay?
That's exactly what our
gaydar.
I'm picking up a vibe, and it's very gaydar cool.
Well, Colin, you know, Mike, How Green Is My Valley, as we talked about maybe, or I mentioned on the Oscar draft episode we did, that was the movie that beat out Citizen Kane for Best Picture at the Oscars. So
no kidding.
It's got to be better than Citizen
Kane.
I've
never seen it. Wow, it's got to be a piece of shit, actually. And Fright Night, by John Ford. Roddy McDowall's in Fright Night, if you guys ever saw that, which of course remade original by Fright Anton Night. Yelchin. Yes, our Star Trek.
Wow. Yeah, wow. The Legend of Hell House, 73, okay.
Legend of Hell House. Thank you. That is, it's fucking awesome.
That's the cover art. That's 70s horror stuff. Yeah, the cover art looks good. Interesting. Well, I love the Planet of the Apes. You can find it in 4K.
It's wild.
I was surprised how good this looked.
I'm sure.
Because some of the filmmaking can sometimes feel amateurish. Like when they're whipping the camera around, when the plane is crashing, it's like, what the hell are we doing here?
Yeah.
But like once we're in the desert and like it really
does. They had some good locations. I mean, I assume they went out to the, California desert or whatever.
It's Arizona. It's Arizona. And then the beach, Jacob, where he's like, I'll go up the coastline. That's Malibu.
Yeah.
And they just put a fucking little statue in there. They're like, no.
I'm pretty sure I shot at that beach, like a random student film,
I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Iconic, but I didn't slam my hands into the water like I should have.
No.
Yeah.
Our last episode, we will go to that beach.
Yes. We will go to Malibu.
We'll record live from
Malibu.
Oh my God. That would be so funny. Full makeup.
What are you guys doing here?
Shut up.
Yeah. But I'm excited to get more into the series over the next 4 months and watch all these sequels and see how crazy they get. So before we get to the Tim Burton one, of course. So
yeah, again, this original five, they're all just different moral parables, about society and whatever. So I just like that they're kind of, they're like their own little cautionary tales with apes. It's very fun. So
that 60s, 70s sci-fi vibe, Twilight Zone. Yeah.
I'm realizing this. I'm going to have the same issue as you, Jacob, because I know when we did the Star Trek ones, you said you'd watch one and you'd be like, I got to watch Wrath of Khan now, or I got to, you know, I got to follow it up. It's going to be hard to not jump into the rest right away.
I was thinking that. When I finished this one, I was like, I want to go right into the next one, but I got
to
wait.
I might jump back to our old friends. I might watch Wrath of Khan after this just to be like, it kind of feels the same. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
Jerry Goldsmith. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ricardo Montalban.
I'm glad we found a new series, and I'm glad we're jumping in this. It's a classic. Again, Taylor is a freaking maniac, but you know.
Yeah.
So we got April. The American in the room.
Goodbye, April.
Planet of the April going into Planet of the Mapes.
Yeah. And I think the new movie comes out May 8th.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
we got some other good movies coming out soon. So I'm excited to talk about. Going into summer, we got new releases, and you know, a lot of good stuff coming out. So stay tuned, normies.
Zira, this is important. Zira and Nova, they are Disney princesses now, technically.
I was gonna say who would I pick, Mike? And you know I'm going Zira.
Yeah. She's so smart.
Sure.
You can talk to her.
I guess they are Disney princesses.
I'm gonna see how she compares to the Helena Bonham Carter version in a couple months.
Yeah, and you'll get a lot more exposure to Zira and Cornelius and then coming movies too. So buckle up.
I can't wait.
Meets his wife on that set. Meets Helena Bonham Carter and cheats on his wife, who's playing a different ape in that movie, to be with Helena Bonham Carter.
In makeup? Weird.
I hope so.
That's the only
knowing Tim Burton,
damn ugly.
Yeah.
But you're so damn ugly. Well, we're going to shave our faces because we're finally getting out of here and we can't look. People our age.
But I come from only kids like you have beards.
Never.
I don't go in for fads. Climb off my back. There's so many weird slangs in this. Yeah.
I'm telling you, climb off my back right now.
Climb off my back.
Again, can I just
climb off it?
And for my final thought, I just want to shout out that one scene where Landon plants the American flag in the beach, and then it cuts to a weird shot of Charlton Heston laughing like menacingly and zooms in on his head
sky or whatever. Yeah, zooms in.
It's amazing crazy. Shot.
Yeah,
we'll talk about I've got more Charlton Heston stories. We'll save that for next time since we get a little bit more. Mm-hmm. We'll say goodbye to him there, but I love the man, and we are gonna miss him. But thank you, normies, for following along. If you're gonna continue your journey with us, we recommend you dab out that cigar, take your little sleepy time heroin shot, lay down, check for any cracks real quick. You're going to want to make sure
there's no air leaks.
Anything going wrong, any little
That's what the smoke was for, was trying to see if it was escaping anywhere. That was tactical cigar. Everything seemed fine.
So good night. But before you do that, hit us up at normies_like_us. Rate, review, subscribe. Tell us you're going apes too. You know, when we're not doing these long forms, suggest other episodes. Say to us, hey, if you guys like apes, I want to hear you do this too. We'll definitely listen to that as well. And hit us up on YouTube because Mike did some great cigar bits this entire episode that you're going to miss out on otherwise. And Jacob, like Jerry Goldsmith, is going to do the next one in a full ape mask. So get ready.
Yeah.
I wish I had one. Yeah.
I'm going to put the remainder of my cigar in my zippered cigar pouch. I am in the jumpsuit. Shout out to Taylor's jumpsuit.
Mike,
you know what I'm saying?
Mike, I was thinking while I was watching this, you have entered your jumpsuit era. And I was thinking with the beard and being a handsome guy like you are, Taylor would be a good Halloween costume for you, dog.
You
walk around with a little monkey in your arms. That's pretty good, I think.
You could go around saying stuff like, man, kills his own brother. I'm trying to get away from him because there's got to be something better out there.
You just walk up to any conversation and say that and walk away. Just like
say the most cynical thing you can.
Hey, what's your deal? Let me tell you your deal. You're dressed up like Pocahontas.
Just keep the laugh Jacob loves in the background.
I guess we're staying.
That jumpsuit real quick.
Yeah.
First of all, it had a tactical heroin zipper flap for the sleeve, so you could, they're doing, sleep medicine.
Puts a cigar in his pocket before he goes to sleep.
Cigar pocket, standardized. But I like to think George Lucas saw this as a young filmmaker and was like, there are no zippers in the future. Because there are too many on that jumpsuit. And George Lucas was like, there's no zippers in Star Wars.
Sure. Well, don't you think Ripley is just wearing a blue version of this? I mean, she's wearing literally exactly the same jumpsuit, dude.
Yo, jumpsuit, it's... Jumpsuit
and the hyperbaric chamber.
Yeah. Definitely influenced for the hyperbaric chamber from this. And then what if Stewart was the only one to live?
Here we go. Oh, boy. Love anyways, we've been your hosts. Enough monkey business. We're going to say goodbye. This is your host. I don't know. I want to be a monkey now. I'm going to say Dr. Colin. Dr. Chimp Colin.
Dr. Nice. Colin Elias.
Yeah. A lot of isses. Julius, Zayas. I'll be Mike Derzayas.
And this is, you can call me Bright Eyes, but my name's Jacob Taylor.
Jacob Taylor, Bright Cobb.
All right, goodbye, give me Bright a horse Eyes. And 50 bullets and I'm getting out of here.
Oh, you're so ugly, Bright Eyes.
All right. Don't listen to anybody over 30, normies.
That's right.
Unless you're trying to like, share and subscribe. Yep. Fight the power.
See you later.
And as Nova always says.
Profound. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
My name is Gandalf the Grey, and I'm imploring you to leave a like, share, and subscribe to this podcast. Don't keep it secret. Don't keep it safe. Don't take me as a conjurer of cheap tricks, and we'll catch you on the next episode of Normies Like Us. Fly, you fools!